Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, January 6, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to National Liberty Alliance and click on Weekly Call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. So you can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in the Gospel of Mark. Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, verses 31 through 38. And he, Jesus, began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected of the elders and of the chief priests and the scribes and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. And he spake that saying openly, and Peter took him and began to rebuke him. But when he had turned about and looked on his disciples, he rebuked Peter, saying, Get thee behind me, Satan, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but the things that be of men. And when he had called the people unto him, with his disciples also, he said unto them, Whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself, and take up his cross, and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever shall lose his life for my sake and the gospel's, the same shall save it. For what shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? Whosoever therefore shall be ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him also shall the Son of Man be ashamed, when he cometh in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. That was the Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, verses 31 through 38. Okay, got quite a few things going on. I guess we'll start with the courses. The course has been lifted open. We had paused at chapter 6 on government by consent course. So anyone taking that course has been opened up now. We've got the rest of the chapters up there. I think we ended up with 10 chapters or 11. I forget how many. And also we finished the book. So the book is done. It's been going through to become perfected. We've got a couple of people going to be reading through it and getting some comments on it and corrections and so on. So that course, again, the course in the book should be moving through soon. I'm going to be approaching a group that might publish it for us. We'll see what happens. The other thing is I think we announced this last week. We spoke a little bit about it last week or the week before, maybe both, I forget. But in any event, we're working with the unorganized militias across the nation. We're going to assist by facilitating for them an education, a place to organize, a place to communicate. And we've set up some pages right now up on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. If you go up to the website, you'll see there's on the blue bar, you'll see People's Duty. So we did add a couple of things concerning the militia there. We have registered for the militia. I think it was last week, or maybe the week before, but I'm pretty sure it was last week. We talked a little bit about the militia, and Brent had brought up the fact that you really can't join the militia. So instead of a join button, we're going to put a register button there to register for the unorganized militia. We'll be meeting over the course of the next few weeks with the leadership who is organizing this, work together with them to assist them into getting some resolutions set up and some uniformed rules and procedures, processes on how to approach the sheriff and operate under the auspices of the sheriff. Also, I want to bring to light the fact that the militia has been around for quite some time, and it was the militia, as they organized under the militia back in the beginning of our nation, they organized the Committee of Safety. So the militia actually worked with becoming the committees of safety, and they were responsible for the Continental Congress, and eventually the Declaration of Independence, and then of course our Constitution and its capstone Bill of Rights. Once the nation went into effect, George Washington became the president, and once that happened, and the Constitution was signed executed, then the committees of safety morphed into what we know today as the committeemen. So there is a direct relationship between the militia and the committeemen, and it's very important to understand that, because again, is the committees of safety or the committeemen, who now are the committeemen, that brought this nation together, and then kept it together. They controlled the political process. Now, George Washington talked concerning this process and that there were people that were creating private associations that we today understand as the Democratic or the Republican Party. They're both private organizations. They are not part of the true political process of our nation. And we intend on taking it back from them and retrieving the two names that people understand as the Republicans and the Democrat, to get rid of the politics, so to speak, and to bring things back down to the nuts and bolts of the way this nation should run. Because if this nation were to run according to our Constitution, and if this nation was controlled by we the people, by controlling the political process through the committeemen, by controlling our courts through the juries, the grand juries and the trial juries, and building administrations in order to bring those groups together, to facilitate for them everything necessary for them to act as a jury of grand jury or trial jury. So we get the opportunity to orientate them. So if we the people were to take back those positions and organize the unorganized militia across the nation in every single county, then we wouldn't need politics, because there's nothing to debate, there's nothing to argue. They can debate and talk about law that we've given them the authority to write. They've written 57 U.S. titles, and they all but one is appropriate. Now, the only one that I don't think is appropriate at all is USC 26. But other than that, they're all appropriate, although they do overstep their authority and power by trying to control our behavior, particularly through U.S. Title 18, which we have to fix, because they don't have the authority to correct our behavior. That's our job. We just have to follow the main rule of law, which is do no harm. And if we do no harm to anyone, we should not be held accountable anywhere by any court system for any purposes. And so, of course, these are the things we teach and talk about, and we've got plenty of sources that prove the fact of what we're talking about, these things. And we're going to be working to help the militias to organize across the nation. We do need to work out a uniform rules and regulations for the militia, so that people act appropriately. Make resolutions, the can-dos and the cannot-dos, to make sure that nobody gets out of control and takes it in a direction that's would be a wrongdoing. Brent Winters has written a book called The Militia. I'm trying to think of the actual name of the something, I forget, the Militia of the Several States, I think it's actually called. And he's going to be sending to me a copy of that book in Word form or some form that I can cut and paste. Sometimes PDFs you can cut and paste out of them. And we're going to create a course I spoke with our tech today, and he's going to be set up the course process up, so we should see that turn up hopefully this week sometime. As soon as that turns on up there, I'll be posting a course up there called The Militia. And it'll be pretty much that booklet that that Brent had put together. He's done a lot of research on it. We'll also be offering that booklet on our right-hand side of our website. And so people should have that hand booklet. It's a pocket book, a booklet just like the pocket Constitution booklets. And so we'll put a link to wherever he's selling it at, and people will be able to purchase those booklets. But again, the course is going to be based on that. Once I get that course, and once I get that booklet, I'm going to get that course up very quickly. I think I could probably put it up in a day or two. So I can get that up very quickly. In theory, if I can have our tech guy do what he has to do tomorrow, and if Brent was to get me a copy of that booklet in Word form by tomorrow, I think I could say by next weekend it will be up there and executable, and people can start taking that course. It will be a free course. Anybody can take it, and everybody should take it. Okay. On that course and on that booklet, I'll thoroughly review it, and we will use our knowledge and understanding of the militia and the history of the militia and common law in the militia, and we will then be able to work together to create resolutions and uniform code across the nation. Each of these militias will be of a county. For instance, it would be, for instance, like let's take New York State Dutchess County Militia, New York State or Orange County Militia, or New Jersey Orange County Militia, and so on. So there's 3,134 counties, so we're hoping to get militias started in every county. We will establish when it becomes organized enough to really be able to approach the sheriff. And again, we'll write a plan on how to approach the sheriff. Now, but each county will be totally independent on their own. No other county, there's going to be no national leadership at all. Again, the purpose of National Liberty Alliance is to facilitate a place to organize, communicate, and educate. That's our purpose. And of course, we've put together the Unified United States Common Law Grand Juries, which works across the entire nation. We have organized every county across this nation, and we've organized a unified state, grand jury for every state. So there's one for New York, New Jersey, California, Texas, Iowa, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we came together. It was 50 organized grand juries from every state. We came together as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And from that position, we are leveraging our position against the United States Supreme Court and both houses of Congress concerning their disobedience to the Constitution. And we're giving them a certain amount of time to start doing the right thing, after which we're going to start indicting, or actually considering indicting. We'll call together the jury, the grand jury, and we'll, ask for a vote on individuals to indict. But right now we have the olive branch out to them. We have filed hundreds of papers in the Federal District Court and Northern District against the United States Supreme Court and both houses of Congress. Back in August of 14th, I believe, 2019, we moved into orders and decisions. The case has come to an end. We've come to our decision, and they're guilty of wrongdoing, of not being obedient to the Constitution. Now, because of the deep state, we understand that many of these people are stuck between a rock and a hard place, and so therefore we have that olive branch out to them. And as President Trump has taken, draining the swamp and taking the swamp out, as soon as that happens, when that swamp is finally drained out and they're out of power, at that point, that's when they'll show their true colors, whether they will be standing with the people or against the people. And at that point in time, those people who refuse and reject to obey the Constitution, to obey the law of the land, we will call together and consider indictments for each and every one of them in both houses of Congress and in the United States Supreme Court and all 94 federal districts. We're starting to move a lot of cases for cause into our court case that we have here in the Northern District on the federal level, of course. And we're using that as our evidence against the United States Supreme Court's dereliction of duty. Due process is out the door. It doesn't exist anymore. It exists in name only. And you might get, due process, usually it's because they're coming out after you and they're refusing to give you a due process. They're coming to take you home with non-judicial foreclosures. Maybe they're coming and maybe the IRS is coming out after you and seizing your property and bank accounts without due process. They just come and seize it in a process called INREM, I-N-R-E-M, which is the law of the sea, the right and the ability for a nation to seize a pirate ship at sea, tow it to their port, and file a claim on it, and fiduciary authority over it, and take control of the property without due process against the pirates. Now, of course, the pirates, there's a 30-day process for that, I understand. Of course, the pirates can come and make their argument, say, I own that ship, but of course they wouldn't, so they seize it. But they're using that process. It's called INREM. They're using that process to seize our property using the IRS, and other things. There's a lot of things that they're doing to seize people's property, you know, non-judicial foreclosures and so on. We've got lots of habeas corpuses out there. We're working on a couple of them right now, or at least one. I'm not sure how many we're working on, but we're working on at least one more recently. And all of those will be brought before the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, as evidence again, with their absolute resistance against giving the people due process, resistant and ignoring and denying, actually coming in silence, okay, and not telling us the truth. The truth of the matter is that they abrogated the common law in 1934, and actually 1934 with the Rules Act, and in 1938 the Supreme Court came out with the rules of the court. And in Rule 2, it eliminated common law and combined equity together with common law and called it civil law. That took place in 1938. And they think that by that action, they had the power and the authority to remove the Bill of Rights, to change the law of the land, to bring us into jurisdictions unknown, and to judge us under civil law, men's law, Babylonian law, Roman law, pick your name, Justinian law. It's all the same. And, of course, this was all done covertly, and we mean to turn it back upside down and bring it right side up again. But anyway, they're in denial, and they're silent. The United States Supreme Court has ruled numerous times over the past past couple of hundred years that silence is the equivalent to fraud when they have a duty to speak. They have a duty to speak. We have the unalienable right of asking them questions. That's under the First Amendment. And they have a duty to speak and answer us. And they refuse to answer us. So it proves fraud there, just by their action proves fraud. But right on their website is where I got the information clearly on their front page concerning what's going on. Matter of fact, we posted that web address numerous places. It's in our course, it's in the book, it's on our website, and you can go out there for the United States Supreme Court. I think it's ussupremecourt.gov, I think, something like that. But you'll find the right on the front page, they talk about Rule 2. And they're not ashamed of it. They don't hide it. Because lawyers are true believers of this. They truly believe that the common law could possibly be abrogated. That means that they got in between the covenant between we the people and God, which is what the Declaration of Independence is, and overruled God and overruled we the people. And they decided for us what they intend for us to have, their civil rights. Excuse me. It was the 14th Amendment that turned us over to civil rights. It set the stage to bring us into civil rights. But of course, things took place, and they had a lot of construction of law to put together until they got to the point. Now they talk about civil rights. When you bring up that you have unalienable rights, you know, they make a mockery over that. Literally, they make a mockery over that. That's how bold they are. But when the deep state goes down, there's going to be a vacancy. There's going to be a void, a power void. And it has to be filled. Someone has to take that power up. And if it's not we the people, then it's only a matter of time before we end up back to exactly where we are today, under their thumb. So we the people need to fill that power void. We need to take that power. And we do that by becoming committeemen, by registering with the militia and becoming active. And becoming active with the militia, you know, it's as active as you want to be. We'll probably put something in the rules where people have to show up at least X amount of times a year for a meeting or something. In the beginning, it'll be very important for everyone to show up because we'll be creating and putting together the rules, the regulation, and organizing and approaching the sheriff and getting things going. But generally speaking, you know, it's not that we'd have to meet too often. Some people might want to be very active and meet very often, and some people may want to only come together maybe once or twice a year. And that we'll work all that out, what the rules will be and what the requirements are. And, you know, again, we want to get uniform regulations across the nation. Each militia group will have that opportunity to add things, but I think we need to build a structure that cannot be removed in the sense of following law and custom and history concerning the militia. And so we'll have to work all that out and get it on paper, and we'll clearly identify how it is we come to certain conclusions that people might disagree with. And we'll show them through law or custom or history on why it is this way and how it was developed. But other than that, you know, other rules could be made by each county, and they can add to these things and so on and so forth. But I wouldn't bog people down start requiring requirements that are hard to keep up for some people. Okay, anyway. We're also working, again, every person, again, should register for the unorganized militia. Every person at some time in their life, and now we need more people more than ever, need to become a committeeman. Or anybody that becomes active in a militia absolutely should be the people to jump up and take these positions as committeemen. And committeemen decide who goes on to the ballots. The committeeman decides on whether, you know, well, they can require a knowledge of the Constitution, you know. When someone wants to get onto the ballot, they go to the committeeman. That's how they get onto the ballot. And the committeeman put them onto the ballot. And they do that by walking petitions for them, getting signatures, and getting these people into office. You know, getting these people on the ballot, and then the people again come out and vote. They vote at the primaries. To make the decision on which person they want on a particular running for an office within their parties, and then they come out again and vote for the general election, which is, you know, one party against another party. We'd like to return back the clock to the Democratic-Republican Party, in other words, fuse the two together. We'll talk more about that. We've talked about it in the past. We'll talk some more in the future. But if you do go up to our website, and go to nationallibertyalliance.org and go under the people's duty, you'll see a lot of information. You can register to become a committeeman. Every person should register to become a committeeman. there's a paper up there, you know, there's a page up there that says become a committee man. You read through it, and then hopefully by the time you get through the page, you're going to click the button and register for your election district. So we have the committee man registering and becoming a committee man. We have the petition process. That's up there right now. People can start watching that and start asking questions on how to fill out a petition. But we're going to get more detail up there in the coming weeks on the petition process as far as more details of walking your district, how to get the names to walk for your district, and to solve certain problems that we're very much aware of that may come up, and how to get around these problems to make sure that we get our petitions done and get them in properly and become the elected committeeman. We also put up there proposed party rules. I think it was 2013 is when we in New York, both Republican Party and the Democratic Party, all elected committeemen outside the private associations, not connected with the Republican Party as people think and understand that, or the Democratic Party as people think and understand that. No, we came together as the true Republicans and Democrats parties from the standpoint of having the power and the authority as elected committeemen. And so we came together, Republicans and Democrats, working together to create rules. And we agreed on the same rules. What controls the Republicans controls the Democrats. But at some point in time, we need to fuse them back together and get rid of this whole party process altogether, because all that is right against the left, one side trying to get an edge over the other side. It becomes a money game, power game, and we need to get rid of all that, and we can, by simply requiring these people to obey the Constitution and remove them from office when they don't. Committeemen can remove people from office through recall. That's the kind of power they have. We, the people, through the grand jury, can remove people from office by indictments. Of course, they have to do a wrongdoing, and being disobedient to the Constitution would be a wrongdoing for them and could be a crime. And in many cases, it is a crime. Let us give an example. If you're an individual that believes that, whatever you believe about people that have a weapon, a gun, an arm, whatever you want to call it, and let's say you kind of disagree with that, you don't think people should. But if you become an individual elected to a Congress or appointed to the Senate, which is the way it should be from the states, but any kind of an elected position. Well, once you take that oath to swear to protect and uphold our Constitution, from that platform, from that political platform, you do not have the authority or the right or to bring forward a platform that is destructive to the people's unalienable rights. The right to defend yourself is unalienable. We don't get it from man, we get it from God. And so no one can take that away from us. And anybody who is using a political platform by being in office and is trying to take away our unalienable rights is in bad behavior and needs to be removed.
Yeah, that's how I get to the wall, usually.
You're coming through here, Gerard. You got to mute yourself.
Oh, so anyway, okay. So,
maybe someone else can mute him.
Wall preferences, okay. And I'm
okay.
There.
Anyway,
it says general.
Can we mute to Gerard? Is anyone else hearing Gerard, or is it just me?
Yeah, I can hear him, but I can't find him to mute him.
Yeah, I know. I don't see him in here.
No, he's not in.
Gerard, mute yourself. You're coming through on this side. Okay, anyway, I lost my place here. Let me think where I was. I don't remember where I was. But anyway, I'll just pick up from any place. So we're working to try to do this organizing, to get everybody together, to organize them. And people need to respond, to act. Oh, okay, bring them back to the parties and requiring these people to be obedient and in good behavior. Good behavior is anyone in office that is operating and obedient to the Constitution and not coming outside of their jurisdiction, their authority. That's good behavior. When someone steps outside of their jurisdiction, steps outside of their authority, tries to undermined the Constitution, undermined our unalienable rights. They're in bad behavior, and they need to be removed. And they should be corrected by the United States Supreme Court. And Congress, of course, has the ability to correct them and even impeach them. But they are underneath. They answer to the United States Supreme Court. That's what American jurisprudence is all about. The United States Supreme Court decisions, lawful decisions, decisions within their authority under equity and not law. They have no authority to make any decisions of law, only decisions of equity. Their job in law is to protect the people's rights. That's their job in law. That's why, if we move our case into federal court for cause, a cause meaning a violation under the Constitution, they need to be protecting our rights and sticking up for the people coming to ask for that protection and not denying it, because today they deny it. But they don't have any authority outside of that. So all of their authority is inside of equity. And they are the deciders of the meanings when a conflict comes up or a situation comes up, and under a particular title, they have the ability to make a judgment on that. And of course, usually it goes to the lower courts first and works its way up to the United States Supreme Court. But the United States Supreme Court decisions, the collections of those decisions, is what really makes up a lot of our American jurisprudence. And they all should be focusing in on that which is just and right, which brings us right back to common law. So they, too, need to apply common law in their logical thinking in equity. And that's where their power and authority is. So when these judges are out there making decisions, denying due process to the people, and the United States Supreme Court does nothing about it, and we're not just talking about a case here or there, we're talking about thousands and thousands of cases across this nation. People who are losing their homes with non-judicial foreclosures. They get no due process and their home is taken. Or they're put in jail without due process and they deny them habeas corpus. The United States Supreme Court is responsible to make sure that that does not happen and to correct them. They're to put forward writs of mandamus, orders to those lower courts to obey the Constitution and to correct those problems. And they're not doing it. I don't know if they've done it in my lifetime. I'm not even aware of any time they've done that, but they should be doing it. And it shouldn't take a court case to do that, in the sense that when they know that there's something running so rampant, and we have reported this for years to these people, and they still have done nothing. Okay, so we've reported it to the courts, and they still have done nothing. But they shouldn't need us to know. Everybody knows the non-judicial foreclosures. Everybody in the federal level anyway, the judiciary and the state levels, they know about the non-judicial foreclosures. And it means exactly what it is. It's a foreclosure taking away your property and your investment in your property without going through the judicial process, without due process. That's what it is. And they know it exists. They've seen a lot of states have written their statutes in order to have that process. And so they know the truth, and yet they don't repair it. They don't set out writs of mandamuses to 94 federal districts and tell them, obey the law. You cannot take people's houses without due process. And Congress should be somewhat involved if they were following the Constitution and start getting rid of some of these judges. Impeach them. Okay? But the United States Supreme Court needs to correct them. I'm not sure how far they can go with that beyond that, but it then becomes the duty maybe of the Congress to do the impeachment. And if Congress isn't going to impeach them, then guess what? We the people will impeach them, and we'll do that through indictments. We'll remove them through an indictment. And so that's what we're doing right now, as a matter of fact. We've got quite a few federal judges and state judges and other level judges that have been indicted over the past couple of years, particularly the past year. And we've got a lot more that's going to be put onto indictment as time goes on for resistance and denying, keeping people in jail without their due process and not permitting them to have their day in court. So anyway, we need to take that process back as much as we need to take back the political process and start correcting these people and removing them from office. This is power. This is authority. This is government by consent. And that's what our course is all about. Our government by consent course is all about that. Giving the power back to the people where it belongs. Anybody who has listened to President Trump's speech when he became president, the inaugurational speech, at the inauguration, and that speech, it's all about bringing people, the power back to the people. Okay? And so he's working at it from the top. We need to be working at it from the bottom up. And to take this whole process back. But it's up to the people to do it. You know, on our website, one of the first things you see is only the people can save America or save the Republic. Only the people can do this. Donald Trump can do it, but then who's going to keep it once it's saved and once he's gone? Who's going to keep it? If the people don't step up and take control and take back their authority as consenters, and that's what the committee man is about. That's what the juries are about. And the final, if necessary, that's what the militia is about. Okay, let me see. I covered the courses. We're going to have that new course up there. And again, I hope to have that up by next week. Hopefully I'm going to be able to announce that on the next Monday night and say, hey, it's up and going. And Jen, make a note to get out a message to, maybe you should send out a special message that the course is opened again and completed and people can take it all the way to the end now. So for the government by consent course. Civil course is still up and open, of course. People can get into that. All these courses are important. Everyone should take all these courses over a period of time. The most important is the government by consent, but also the civil course is really extremely important. Because it explains how we got to where we're at. And if we don't know how we got here, that means it could happen again. You know, if you don't know history, you're destined to repeat it. Everybody's heard that. Okay, so you need to understand how these people did what they did. And that's what that course teaches. The militia course is going to be extremely important because it's going to put us all on the same page. It's going to bring you into the history and the common law process of the militia, how it came to be, and so on. And so we're going to follow what our founding fathers followed, and who can argue with that? You know, I know sometimes people want to think we should do something this way, another person that way. Well, let's go back to our founding fathers because they thought this out very good, very well. And not only that, they didn't have all of these things, computers are great, by the way, but, texting and all these different things and involved watching movies and different things. They were focused. These people were educated, highly educated. They were self-educated. And they gave a lot of thought to this, to try to figure out the best way to do things, the best way they can create this nation. Jefferson, explored history in depth all over. And he was the one that came and brought together the formula of what we have as the United States of America, the basic formula, and the type of government, breaking it up into three branches and so on. One other thing, some people have been writing some emails. I've seen them come through wanting to get into the IRS thing. Anybody having a problem with the IRS, anybody that is getting annoyed by them by constantly having these letters coming out, which, by the way, you should answer every single one of them. Let me think about this. Maybe I'll put a page together to express and explain to people that you can't ignore these people. You have to respond to every paper. Every time you receive a paper, you need to send something back. Need to keep it very clean and bare minimum, focusing in on, what's your proof of claim? Where is it? I don't see it. Where do you get these numbers from? Okay. And what is their fiduciary authority should they try to gain access into your accounts or seize your property? What is their fiduciary authority? These are the two things, the two questions they need to be asked. And they cannot answer those. And so you need to respond back to every paper that they send you. Because if you don't, then you acquiesce, you agree, and they're going to take jurisdiction over you. You must, and you always want to respond back. I don't write letters back to the IRS, okay? I send them affidavits, and that's what you need to do. You need to turn your letter into an affidavit, a sworn affidavit. You're swearing to what you're saying. How come you're not swearing to what you're saying? Where's your proof of claim? Because that's an affidavit, by the way. Proof of claim is an affidavit from them in order to claim that you owe them something, and they have to lay it out and prove it and show it. They can't do it. They make these numbers up. So anyway, I'm going to lay out the criteria of what needs to be put together in an affidavit in order to join up with what we're doing here to file it into the federal district courts and federal and serve it onto the United States Supreme Court as evidence, and the fact that they have a duty to fix this problem. These people are out of control, and they know they're out of control, and they do nothing. So we need to go and nail it to their door. And we've nailed a lot to their door, and we're going to keep nailing to their door. So anybody that wants to get involved with that, I am going to create a page, and I'll make reference to it. We'll put it into our newsletter, this IRS thing. Anybody wants to connect to it, go to this page, read it. And if you want to do an affidavit to join up with us on this, then that's what you do. And it also helps to bring us a little safety. There's safety in numbers. And even if you're going through the courts and through the administrative process and all being just beat up with the papers, you know, we may not be able to do much for it now, but at the end of the day, when the deep state goes down and their protection is gone, they have no place to hide, and we the people will come in and take power. That's just a matter of time. But we have to set the stage. We have to become educated. We have to understand what we're doing, and we have to know how we're doing it and make sure what we're doing is 100% lawful. And we're very careful about that. If we don't have a source showing the validity of what we're doing, the value, a maxim, it's undeniable truth, our positions. We prove and show everything that we do. We don't do anything that may get us in trouble. So anyway, on the page that I'm going to set up, I'll give a brief description of what we're doing, and I will then lay out what needs to be inside your affidavit. Okay, I'll have to give some thought to this and do something generic that'll work for everyone. So again, we'll get this word out, and anybody that sends in that affidavit, we'll be compiling them, and eventually we'll let you know when we're going to then write a paper and send it into the United States Supreme Court and demand writs of mandamus is ordering these judicial processes or these assaults on the people to cease and desist. And if they don't do it, then we will. Because we're making decisions right now. We've been doing so since August 14th. And it doesn't matter to us that they're ignoring us. They're not really ignoring us. They are ignoring us, but it's not that it just goes away. They know it's there. And they know that one day, when the deep state goes down, I don't know if they believe that's going to happen yet or not. A lot of them are self-deceived. But in any event, those who do know that something's going on and that the deep state's going down and they're going to lose their protection, they know at that point in time, they now got to answer. They're not going to be able to get away with it. But the people have to believe. The people have to do. The people have to act. The people have to respond. The people have to do what's necessary. You have to register with the militia. You have to become a committeeman, if at all possible. And a committeeman only requires about 40 hours a year. That's it, 40 hours a year. And it's one of the best jobs going. You get to come together for 2 or 3 hours in a particular evening around the election time, particularly the primary election, And you get to interview these people and decide whether they're getting on the ballot or not. And if they don't know the Constitution, then you send them away to learn it. Send them to National Liberty Alliance. Go take the government by consent course and then come back, because then you'll be able to answer my questions. But remember, if you haven't taken that government by consent course and you don't know the Constitution, then you're not qualified to even ask these people these questions. You don't even know what questions to ask. So we all have to become educated. If people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. Thomas Jefferson. And that's a fact, you know. Keep the slave ignorant so they don't know how to step up and take their liberty. But liberty starts in the mind, but it doesn't come to maturity until you eventually exercise it. It's time to exercise it. It's time to become mature. It's time to learn and know and do. Let's see what else we have. Oh, we do have the New York SAFE Act lawsuit. We mentioned a week or so ago that they have defaulted. Over the holidays we mentioned this. We'll be writing papers, hopefully this week. We've got a lot of things to be doing and papers to write, but we'll see if we get that one done. I think we can get that one done. It's going to be a default paper. It should go rather quickly. So we're going to do a default on that and send it in to the governor of New York State in both houses and tell him to cease and desist. We're going to make a decision. So they defaulted. Let me see if there's anything else here we have to think about. Or Jan, do we have any questions? Any questions been sent in?
Yes, there is an announcement or two as well.
I saw something on the IRS. Someone wanted to know, they missed the meeting, they wanted to know what they could do or things of that nature. I already covered that, so they just got to pay attention and look for that page. It'll be coming up soon. I'll be announcing it, and you'll be putting it into the newsletter. But go ahead.
Okay, the first question is, where do we stand on the affidavits that were emailed before Christmas? I have not heard anything as of yet.
What affidavits?
Doesn't say.
I'm presuming they're talking about the IRS.
Okay.
So that's been covered. We're going to be laying out the specific that's going to be required in those affidavits. That has to be covered, the points that need to be addressed. And then, you know, to send us a copy, and we'll just collect them. And then, you know, we'll write a paper and we'll file them in a court in the Northern District here of New York, and we're going to serve it on the United States Supreme Court like we've been with the other papers, nailing it to their door. Okay, what else?
Okay, this is a little bit long. This is about my 11-year-old grandson. It was a court order on November 14th for my grandson to go to Rivercrest in San Angelo, Texas for evaluation because they believed he was suicidal, homicidal. My grandson was removed from his mother's house and placed into my care because his maternal grandmother was sexually abusing him. After the judge in my son's CPS case, the mother's attorney and our attorney came out of the judge's chambers with a decision of sending him for evaluation for 2 weeks, giving CPS temporary custody, so the state would be responsible for the bill. Then from Rivercrest, CPS sent him to Harbor.
Is this saying that they did this or they want to do this?
No, they've done it. They have done it. This was last year in November.
Okay.
So they sent him to Harbor Sheltering RTC in Springs, Texas. It's a foster care home. When this child has multiple aunts and uncles, great aunts, will you take him in? We go to court again on the 17th of January. I just need help getting my grandson home and out of this horrible place. That would be the foster home.
Yeah, look, this whole thing is evil. It's all operating under the family court system. We need to shut that whole system down and build a whole new system. We got some ideas, and I'm sure other people have some ideas, and we can come together and create a better system than what we have. Clearly, the last thing we want is an attorney's to be judges and represent our children in that kind of a fashion. No, we don't want those people to get involved in our family life. They're incapable of doing that. They can't do anything that's going to be, in my opinion, beneficial or healthy. Because it's only lawyers, you know. And you know, you get lawyers together and forget about it, you know. So we have to change that whole system. We need to set up an arbitration system. And that arbitration system needs to be dealt with by people who are qualified, maybe in counseling and things of that nature, and work out the problems, not execute the problems, because they run it like a court of law. It's like being punished instead of being corrected and trying to bring the families back together. You don't bring a family to get it together and give everyone a lawyer and bring them in before a judge and let them argue it out and let them. And these people are arguing things that they don't even know. You know, it should be the people involved talking and trying to solve these problems. It's almost like counseling, really. But a big problem is that when they take your children away, they will not allow family to assist. You know. That's the purpose of extended family, to work with the rest of the family, to help in a problem, in a situation. And if aunts and uncles and grandparents want to get involved to take the child if they're in a dangerous situation or a bad situation, they should be able to do that. But they won't. They don't do that. They won't do that. The whole system is set up to destroy the family. Bottom line, that's what it is. It's a socialist thing. They just want to destroy the family. We need to build something that assists the family to bring everybody right back onto the right track. That's all I got to say on that, I guess.
Okay.
You know, as far as the past and all that other stuff, if this was all fresh and happening, you know, I definitely wouldn't allow any of that to happen. I'd go get my own evaluation. I'd find a psychiatrist or a psychologist. I don't know which one would be involved in that. I think a psychologist, and try to figure things out and find out what's going on. I definitely wouldn't let the state handle that side of it because, again, they're nothing but destructive. Okay.
Yeah, I think it was a matter of they didn't have the funding to do that, John, so they let the state do it.
The state wants to do that, then give me the money to go find a psychologist or whatever to deal with this problem. You know, they're going to spend twice as much anyway by them paying for it than for, you know, the people to find their own assistance in that area and get it done. But go ahead.
Okay, I am on probation, but filing papers tomorrow to challenge jurisdiction on a past case that I'm on probation for, and for a case in a different county for pulling me over for no license when I was supposed to still have a license before the sentencing on the first case. I know I have a mess, right? Anyway, my question is, should I stop going to my probation? I kind of already have stopped doing the drug tests and will end up in jail for those if I don't file these papers tomorrow. But I'm just wondering if I'm doing the right thing. I don't want to give them any more authority to harass me for victimless color of law crimes than I've already given them.
Well, look, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place to begin with, okay? You have no choice but to comply. You can only do the best you can and comply. That doesn't mean you can't fight them. By challenging their jurisdiction is a good way to go. I don't know that you're going to get any justice there because, again, all these judges are on the same page. And they're true believers. You know, they're minions of the New World Order. They are true believers that the common law has been abrogated and this system that they got going now is the system. This is what they're taught in school. And so you're under civil law, and that's what they're being applied. And that's a jurisdiction. And actually, it's even worse than that, because they don't even follow even their own statutes, codes. They don't even follow that. Half the time, they're making it up as they go. Therefore, you're in jurisdictions totally unknown. But any civil case, you're in a jurisdiction unknown. You know, the people don't know what the statutes and different things to begin with, but you can't control a person's behavior. You know, again, we're under common law, and we need to be judged in a common law court. And the bottom line there is do no harm. And if you haven't harmed anyone, especially intentionally, then you cannot be held responsible. Of course, if you injure someone, and even though you didn't have any intent of doing it, but you did it, you're still responsible to restore that person. So there's a certain amount of responsibility that a person still is held underneath. But again, as far as it being a crime, it's not a crime to drive without a license. You don't need a license to drive. You have a right to travel. And they can't tell you, well, you can walk, or you can get a cab. No. That's BS. You have the right to travel. And, what are they going to tell you? You can't have your own horse and buggy back in the day, you know? But in any event, all of that was in done unlawfully, ultimately. You've been deceived, defrauded. But the only thing you could do is challenge the jurisdiction. Maybe it's possible to get a judge that may really listen and say, hey, you're right, and agree with you. Doubtful, but it's possible. But I would definitely do that anyway, even if you lose it, and then move it for cause into our case after you lose that. And then it'll be someplace where eventually when we can bring these court systems back under justice again, back under common law, then these court cases will then be dealt with. And people will be restored because that person's an injured party. They've been injured and they need to be restored. They spent time in jail, okay? They've been forced to comply, to be obedient. They tried to get their due process and challenge the jurisdiction and denied that. All of those are damages. These people, not the state, these people who are injuring you, from the judge all the way down to, whoever that's part of this process, they need to restore you out of their own pockets. Anyway, be careful. If you don't show up because they tell you to go for probation, you're right. You're going to end up back in jail, and you don't want to be in jail. So you don't have a choice but to comply, at least not right now. But all I can say is justice is coming. Okay, what's next?
Okay, all I have left are a couple of announcements, and one you've hit pretty hard already, and that's that the Governed by Consent course is now open. It's complete. It's ready to go. All those people that have been sending me emails wondering when we're going to finish it, it is done. You can jump on it and hopefully work your way through it rapidly, and we'll be happy to see you finish it, and I'm sure you'll be happy as well. Now, the second thing is, as I've mentioned several weeks in a row, we have divided the 50 states up into 10 groups for the Committee Man Project. We now have leaders for three of those groups. The East Coast is covered, and California, Nevada is covered. So we're looking for about seven more people in the hinterlands between the two coasts to step up and volunteer.
Do we have the map up for the districts?
I had you put it on the website. I forget where you put it, but it is up on the website.
Okay, well, it probably is under the committee man page. Let me take a look under people's duty, and then become a committee man is probably the page. I'll click on that. It's probably it's breaking up to the counties, but it doesn't break up to districts. Let me go all the way down. I thought you did ask me to put it in here.
I found it one day, so I know it's up there.
Okay. Well, go ahead. Keep talking. I'll look for it meanwhile.
Well, that's about all I had to say. We need three. We have three filled. We need about seven more to volunteer. If you go to the website, when John tells you where to look, you can see what states are involved. And if you're in one of those states, then please consider signing up. And as soon as we get all 10 people together, then we'll be able to start moving forward on that. On the Committee Man Project. So if you'd like to volunteer, just send an email to jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll be happy to put your name on the list.
Okay. Jan, when you get a chance, go out to the page for the Committee Men, Registered Committee Men, okay? And there's at least one, I think there's two, that don't have an election district. I'm looking right here. As a matter of fact, there's a duplicate up here, too. One has an R instead of a number in it. It's one of the first ones. And then a little down, we have one that's got only five digits. They should have 5 plus 4. That's not 5, 6, seven, that's 9. So
right.
It should be 9 digits. And I know when Carl set this up, he may not have made it a requirement of 9 digits. So they got through without it. So that needs to be fixed so we get the proper election district.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's changed that so you have to enter 9 digits or it won't take it.
Yeah. Well, it must be 9. If it's 10, it's too many. If it's 8, it's too little. It's got to be 9. And it's got to be numbers. I don't know if he can do that to make sure it's a number, not a letter. Otherwise, then they're not showing their election district, and someone else will be running against them, and we don't want to run against ourselves.
Right.
So. Okay, we're done with that?
Did you find the map so you can tell us where it's located?
I was
looking. You got sidetracked.
You took me another direction here. Let's see, become a committeeman is not there. Registered committeeman, maybe it's in that. Nope, that's not it. We have the petition process. I don't think it's there, but maybe it is. Let's go take a look. Nope, it's not there. Goodness, I don't know where this is at. It could have been... We'll get it up there, okay? So each one of these districts cover anywhere from 3. There's one there that has 2 states in it, some that has 3, some that has 4, and a few places that maybe have 5. But we need to organize this and make sure we get the committeeman process going. Look, we do not have that many people signed up for committeemen. I'm very disappointed in that. Everybody needs to become a committeeman. Again, it only requires 40 hours a year. That's it. And that's around the election time, and it's a great job. You get to sit down and talk to these people who want to run for office and take control. And at the end of the day, if they pass the test that we, through conversation, that they do understand the Constitution, they've taken a course or they've studied themselves to understand these things, and you're good with that, then the bottom line is to remind them. Now, when you go into office and you take that oath, we're going to hold your feet to the fire, and we'll be watching. And if you start veering away from obedience to that Constitution, we're going to give you one phone call, and then we're recalling you. Okay, and believe me, if a committeeman talks to any person in elected office or running for elected office like that, they are listening and they're going to be obedient because they owe their job to the committeeman. They don't get on the ballot without going through the committeeman. It's very rare that someone can get onto the ballot. It's possible, but it's very rare for someone to get on the ballot without the committeeman. But even if they did get on the ballot without the committeeman, they're not being obedient to the Constitution, they'll get one warning. And if they're not going to obey and behave themselves, be in good behavior, we're going to pull them out. And that's the attitude we're going to have. So, all right, if that's it, I guess we're ready to move over to Brent. There's nothing else?
No, that's it, John.
Okay. All right, by the way, I know we got a couple of people here from the militia. We need to get a meeting going to try to start organizing and getting things happening. I think we can have a lot. We can have everything done in a week or two, including the course, and be rocking and rolling and moving things along. But we have to come together to get some. I have a lot of questions, and we have to figure out how to work things out. And then we have to have that meeting to get resolutions and get together some uniformed rules and plans on how to approach the sheriff and some other things. And even the townspeople, other people, the town government. Okay, I guess we'll move over to Brent. Gerard, are you here?
I'm
up and going here? Okay, because I'm going to pass, as soon as I pass it over to Brent, I'm going to pass the controls to you. And I'll be in the background. But we're going to move over to Brent Winter. I see he's in with as a host right now, so I guess I figured it out with you, Brent. Before I introduce you, Brent, were you able to get a hold of a written copy, maybe in Word or a PDF that I can cut and paste from to create that course? Brent, you here? I see he's unmuted. unless he's muted in another way. Yep, it looks like you just unmuted yourself or something, Brent. Try it. We're not hearing you. Looks like you got a headset on. And now you're unmuted. Just unmuted yourself. Maybe you're muted on your computer somehow.
Yeah, if you mute the mic, you've got to unmute the mic, not the panel.
Well, he just muted himself. Now he unmuted himself. Trying to think on what could be. Let me see. If I go up to my mic and mute myself. Now I unmuted myself. Now I'm unmuted. Okay. You're unmuted on your mic in the program, but there must be something on your computer. Maybe your mic is disconnected, or you've got an off switch on your mic somewhere. Maybe there's a volume for your mic. I don't know. All right, what we'll do is I'm going to take some questions. As soon as you can pipe in and let us know you can talk, we'll pass things over to you. All right, so I'll hold off for a short while before I introduce Brent. And Brent, just pipe in as soon as you think you got it going. Give us a testing or whatever, and we'll go over to you. All right, let's take a caller there. The first caller is Ed there. Gerard, you got control of the controls.
Committee man?
Yep, go ahead, Ed.
You had suggested that we try to get on the Democratic ticket. Well, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
Well, look at it's not the Democratic Party that's the problem, nor is it the Republican Party that's the problem as far as the political process is concerned. It's the private associations called the Democratic and Republican parties that's the problem. And the party bosses have taken control of the political process and have brought in this facade to make us think that they are the proper parties. Okay, they're not. Once the committee man becomes elected and takes control, they have to shut down. You know, that's a money-making thing. They got buildings, they got offices, they got telephones, they got computers, they're doing all kinds of things and having all kinds of activities, and they're doing it in the name of the Republican Party, or they're doing it in the name of the Democratic Party, and all these things. But when we take back control, that name belongs to the people. They have to cease operating under those names. Okay, so they no longer, they can call themselves whatever they want. But now, when the committeemen take control of this, we got to get rid of the politics by just enforcing the law. That's our job. It put good people in office, statesmen instead of politicians, and making sure that they know the Constitution and that they're obedient to the law and operating within their jurisdictions, or whatever powers and authorities they have. We've got to make sure that they do that. That's what our job is. That's what the party's job is supposed to be. And not get involved in trying to push legislation to give me more power than you kind of thing, because it's just that's all it is, okay? It's just a fight for more power and to get more unconstitutional things going and adopted and so you can make more money and more power. That's all. We've got to get rid of that. That's not part of what our process should be. So, but yeah, we do want to take back the Democratic Party as much as the Republican Party. So if people, there are Democrats, I saw some people that are signed up that are Democrats already, and that's okay. We need the Democrats, and they have the same interest we do, and that is to bring back the Constitution, to bring these people back under the chains.
Yeah, well, I had thought of trying to take that position in a Democratic committee, man, but I'm registered independent.
Well, that's a major problem.
Yeah,
because none of those parties, independent parties, constitutional parties, none of them have any power or authority. None, zero, period, nothing. Okay, they think they do, but they don't, and it's designed that way to prevent them from having power, and they just don't know it. And that's why you always get a Democrat or a Republican in office, but occasionally you get someone else that comes in. It's rare. So what you need to do, if you want to participate and take power in the committeeman process, you have to become either a Republican or Democrat. Doesn't mean you have to vote Democrat or Republican, okay? But look, you become a Democrat, and you get to discuss these issues with the people that want to get onto the ballots, and you put out the requirements. You got to know the Constitution, and you got to obey it. But before you can put that requirement down, you got to know the Constitution. So if you know it, that's what it's all about. Let's bring these parties back under the control of the people, and eventually we want to morph them back together, or maybe we can call them the Democratic Republican Party. I remember years ago, many going back 150, 200 years ago, that name was valid. I think in Jefferson's time, they said something about, I read something somewhere about the Democratic Republican going up again as a party back then. But that's what people called themselves. But we got to get rid of the party system. We don't need it.
John, am I being...
We have the Constitution. All right, anything else, Ed?
John?
Well, that's still...
Yeah, okay, I hear... Hold on 1 minute, Ed. Yeah, I hear you. Can you raise your mic a little more, Brent, because you're coming through now?
Well, apparently I can't, but I'm trying to figure out how to... Who knows what's going on, but you can hear me, but not good
enough. We can hear you. I just raised my volume a little bit. Let me finish up with Ed, and then we'll go to you, okay?
All right. Okay, that's fine.
All right, go ahead, Ed.
So you're recommending that I change my party over to the Democrat to help them out?
Absolutely, because you can't run for committeeman that has any power. They do have a committeeman process, I'm sure, with these other parties, but there's no power to it. It's just not there. So we have to take the two major parties and take them back and bring them back to what they should be. You know, they should not be a private association there to give power to an individual or a group or a special interest group or any of those things. We're there to get statesmen to run for office and obey the Constitution and not abuse their power. That's what we're there for. That and counting the votes, to make sure that the votes were counted. If they're counted by machine, that's fine. Now let's open the machine up. Let's count them by hand, because we're not going to trust privately counted votes. And then we make sure that the votes were counted properly, and then we certify them. No, we don't do the certification. There are people that are hired during that time period that do the certifications. But we are there to witness it and make sure that it runs in order and that there's nothing fugazi going on, so to speak. But, yeah, there's no power in anything else other than the Republican and Democratic Party. As a matter of fact, if you go up to our website and go to the petition process, click on that, and there's a guy, Lenny Roberto. I think it's about an hour long. It's six parts. So each part's 10, 12 minutes long, whatever. And he'll discuss that in that presentation. He talks about the power. That there is no power outside of the Democratic or Republican Party as far as the committeemen and the political process is concerned. And to prove that point, just go to your Board of Election, okay? And on the right side, you'll have the Republicans, and on the left side, you'll have the Democrats. As a matter of fact, I believe it was in Albany. I went up to the Board of Election in Albany one time with somebody, and they actually have a little dividing wall going right through. You've got the counter there, and in the center of that counter, going perpendicular to the county, the counter all the way back, there was like a little 3-foot wall, okay? And the Republicans were on one side, the Democrats on the other side, and depending on who you were there to do business with, the Republican or the Democrat, you'd be the right or the left, whatever. But there's no independents there, there's no constitutional parties there, there's no other party. That tells you who's in power.
So the guy that started out this whole process, they didn't even have a Democratic or a Whig or none of these things. They were just committeemen, right?
That's right. We need to get back to that.
Okay.
That's exactly where we need to get back to.
Oh.
There's in our form of government, there is no right, there is no left. There's only the Constitution. That's it. So we don't need the two bottles. Okay. Thanks, Ed. Okay. Let's see. I'm just going to mute Ed. We'll finish with him before we go to the next caller. We're going to go to Brent first, Gerard, and I'll pass things over to you. Brent, you ready?
Ready.
Okay.
I'm ready.
By the way, real quickly, were you able to find a copy of the Militia of the Several States booklet that I can cut and paste out of?
Yes.
Okay, can you drop it in my Skype?
Yes.
Okay, great. See, would you, if you could do that in the next 24 hours, I can get working on that in the next day or two. I'll get that course up pretty quick. I'm dying to read it through anyway, so.
Okay.
But anyway, let me introduce you. This is Brent Winters. He's the author of the book, The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. And Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you so much. My comments are my own, as always. May or may not comport with anybody else who's in the leadership of National Liberty Alliance, although I have found that most often they do. We're talking about the Second Amendment. The reason we're talking about the Second Amendment is because it's in the forefront of people's consciousness right now. I ran for Congress in another life. I ran hard, and I didn't spend a lot. Well, I spent a lot of money, but it wasn't my money. It was other people's money that wanted me to win. And one of the reasons they wanted me to win, I didn't win, by the way, but one of the reasons they wanted me to win was because the Second Amendment was front and center. And when I started to run, I didn't know anything about politics. I didn't know anything about how it's organized locally. My family had never been involved. My dad, he teamed in the oil field, and we lived on a farm, and he wouldn't even let us go to the county fair. He was afraid we'd bring hog cholera home on our boots, so we weren't public people. And I went down to the courthouse. I had my bib overalls on, and I went into the clerk's office in that little town there, a small rural county, and I asked old Downey. He was the clerk, and I knew his granddad. We were shirt-tailed cousins. And I asked Downey, what do you got to do around here to run for Congress? He said, well, do you know somebody wants to run, Brent? I said, yeah, I want to. He said, you do? I said, yeah, I do. And he got this big book down off the top of this tall filing cabinet, and we got to looking through it about what we had to do. He'd never had anybody ask him that either. Well, I ended up doing it. I didn't have any money, and you got to have a lot of money to run for Congress. I didn't have any. And I remember I started running, and it wasn't long after that I received a check in the mail. It was for a substantial sum of money. To me, $250. Now, before it was over, we ended up spending $1 million. But $250, and I thought, wow, why would somebody write me a check for $250? And I pulled out the note in the envelope. And it said, I don't know who you are. And by the way, I was running in 27 counties, so it was a wide district. Matter of fact, it was the largest geographical area of any Congress district east of the Mississippi. It was a rural district. And he sent me a check. He said, I don't know who you are, and I don't know what you believe, but I know this. I'll vote for anybody who will run against the congressman we now have because he voted for the Clinton crime bill. And I said, well, that sounds like something I need to be talking about. And indeed, did I talk about it? And indeed, was it a big deal? And it was a big deal back then, and I got to looking for things to say, and it didn't take long till I had memorized the Second Amendment, and I'd never even tried to memorize it, but I heard it so much. I got to looking for things to say, and I found out there was a fellow that ran for Congress over 20 years before, and he'd written a book about the Second Amendment. He lost, too. But I read the book. It wasn't a big book. He wrote it because he was running for Congress. And the question has never changed. whether it's 1970s, 1990s, or 25 years later now. That was ultimately 50 years ago that other fellow was running. It's never changed. The same stupid stuff is going on today. The same buffoonery is in Congress. The only difference is it's exacerbated by silly, ridiculous, childish women, banshees screaming about nothing, and the men are worse. That's what's happening. It was bad then. It's worse now. So the questions never change. I'd like to read to you. He who never quotes is never quoted. I'd like to read to you what Justice Joseph Story said about the Second Amendment. 39 years after the ratification of the Constitution of the United States. Listen to this. Justice Joseph Story served longer than anyone on the court, the Supreme Court of the United States, and is the youngest appointee we've ever had. I believe he was 32 years old. Smart feller. He said, and yet though this truth, what truth? Well, the truth about the Second Amendment being important. He said before that, the right of the citizen to keep and bear arms has justly been considered. This is in his commentaries on the Constitution of the United States. The right of the citizen to keep and bear arms has justly been considered as the palladium, P-A-L-L-A-D-I-U-M, palladium of the liberties of the Republic. He says, the Second Amendment is the palladium of the liberties of the Republic. I'll go back to that. Since it offers a strong moral check against usurpation and arbitrary power of rulers, and will generally, even if these are successful in the first instance, enable the people to resist and triumph over them. And yet, though this truth would seem so clear, and the importance of a well-regulated militia would seem so undeniable, it cannot be disguised that among the American people, there is a growing indifference. Did you hear what he said? Among the American people, there is a growing indifference to any system of militia discipline, and a strong disposition from a sense of its burdens to be rid of all regulations. How is it practicable to keep the people duly armed without some organization? It is difficult to see. There is certainly no small danger. This is his last sentence in his commentary, his last sentence concerning the Second Amendment. There is certainly no small danger that indifference may lead to disgust, and disgust to contempt, and thus gradually undermine all the protection intended by this clause of our National Bill of Rights. He saw at that time, we're talking 175 years ago, and he's saying that it is the palladium. What is the palladium? That's an old Greek word from the Roman Greco world that talks about the sign of something. It is that which we have that tells the rest of the world that we are free. Listen, I've looked, and I've looked for many years, and I'm still looking. I spend my time looking for something in history that tells me, that shows me, that there has been a people that has had the right to keep and bear arms that has been comparable to ours, written on the books of law, the law of their nation. There has been one nation, one in the history of Adam's race, who has had a law that is comparable to ours. None that's had a law that's that much greater, but just one nation, and that nation that had that law squandered it entirely. Who was that nation? The nation of Israel of ancient times. Read the Old Testament. You'll see a detailed set of provisions concerning the militia of the 12 several tribes of Israel. It was all there. And we're the only nation in the history of the world that has had a law that's been comparable to that, albeit is not the inspired or expired, as Peter puts it, word of God. But our law is founded upon theirs. How do I know? Because it says in the first phrase of our Constitution of the United States, we the people. We the people. Where did that phrase come from? I know exactly where it came from. It came from the Old Testament of the Bible. The Hebrew phrase ha'am, ha. Ha, that means the, that's a definite article. And am, that means, or we translate it, people. And in the Hebrew tongue, always, am, ha'am, denotes a band of armed men. And in most all cases, not all, because sometimes it refers to the militia of another nation, but in most all cases in the Old Testament, Ha'am bespeaks the militia of the 12 several tribes of Israel, the armed males of the nation of that people. And when they came out of Egypt, they did not come out with their tails tucked between their legs, running like scalded dogs. They came out, the language is precise, in ranks of five, the men did. They all came out, the men, women, and children, the infirm, all of them. But the men came out that were able-bodied in ranks of five, it says. That's what that word means, though it's not often translated that way. In ranks of five, armed, as some of the old translations put it, with a high hand. The Pharaoh of Egypt, the emperor of Egypt, he wanted them out of there, bad. He told them to get. They thumbed their noses at him, armed themselves, got in formation, and marched out. Not with their weapons, as we would say today, slung, but with their weapons on their shoulders, as we would say today. It did start that way. Our common law is that way. Now's the time to find out what's going on. Now's the time to understand the Second Amendment. Virginia is awake to it because of what the government has declared they're going to do. It's time to wake up. Smell the coffee, boys and girls. They're after your guns. There's only one reason why any government would want to disarm its people. And here's what it is. I'm quoting somebody, but I don't remember who it was. But I want to say I'm quoting because, again, he who never quotes is never quoted. I want this to be said again and again. The only reason any government would want to disarm a people is so that that government could do to those people what it could not otherwise do if they were armed. The only reason any government would disarm a people is so that that government could do to that people what they could not otherwise do if that people were armed. No small matter. Let me read. Quoting. This is Chief Justice Taft of the United States Supreme Court. Before I talk about Justice Taft, I've got to get this in. I don't like to talk about myself, but it's important that I talk about something that I've done, and I want you to have it. John mentioned a while ago my book. It's a short book. It's a booklet. I measured all the shirt pockets in my closet, and I found out that there's a consistency there, and I wanted this book to fit into a man's shirt pocket, and I wanted it to fit in the purse of the lady who wants to carry it and have it handy. And it's that small. I designed it for the purse and the shirt pocket, and the name of the book is The Militia of the Several States. That's a phrase out of our Constitution of the United States. The militia of the several states, our Constitution's answer to its enemies, foreign and domestic. the militia of the several states. Why do I say foreign and domestic? Because, not because the militia's duty is to have a monopoly on violence. They are, but that's only one part of the duty of the militia of the several states. The other duty, as ancient as it is, it's still here, and that's the duty to serve on the jury. Because to serve on the jury is to protect the law of the land. What is the law of our land? That phrase lifted from Magna Carta. And that was the phrase they used back then to bespeak due process. What is due process? Due process is our common law, period. Our common law is not a list of laws. It's a way of life. It is a process. It is, as our Northwest Ordinance of 1787 for the governance of the territories north and west of the Ohio River says, it is due process is the course of our common law. Our common law is a process-oriented way of life. The law of the city is a result-oriented way of life that is represented well by the Jesuit order who is under the law of the city, the canon law of Rome. The ends justifies the means. And if the ends justifies the means, torture is lawful. Is it any accident that all of the countries of South America, where the law of the city prevails, the code of Justinian, the canon law of the Roman Church, the torture is part of their legal tradition? You want to read about torture more? Go to the book of Acts. Go to the gospel records. The Roman Empire. And see how they use torture. It's fascinating to read Acts. You can see it over and over again. Paul the Apostle beaten half to death. Jesus Christ beaten till he was nothing but a pile of rubble. They did that because that's the way they got information out of people. How do we do it at common law? Well, we do it through cross-examination. But here again, I didn't talk about my book. I want you to get my book. It's about 100 pages, booklet. It's about the four militia clauses of the United States Constitution. The Second Amendment is the last of four. It's the foundation of the other three. It's the only one of the four that does not delegate any duties. None. No, it recognizes a duty that the militiaman has, and it says we're going to protect it. Because if he doesn't have the right, that means the duty, that's what the old Anglo word right means, by the way, if he doesn't have the right to keep and carry a loaded weapon, well then those other three militia clauses don't amount to a pinch of dried owl droppings. Now listen, I want to quote here. I got to get to the right page. This is Chief Justice Taft. You can find that book at Amazon.com. Amazon.com. Just type in my name, Brent Allen Winters, and it will come up. Or go to the website, commonlawyer.com, and it'll tell you how to obtain a copy there as well. Speaking of the Second Amendment, according to the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Notice it doesn't say country. It's talking about each of the states, the several states. The right, that is the duty of the people, that is the militia. Remember, that's what that word means, and that is what it's always meant. I can show you where those that drafted the Constitution say, who are the people? They ask the rhetorical question, who are the people? And then they say, it is the militia. Who are the militia? It is the people. We, the people of the United States, and the militia has two duties, two fundamental duties, jury duty and the duty of armed defense. Jury duty is to defend the law of the land domestically, uphold it. And if you uphold the law of the land, which is our common law, due process, all these phrases mean our common law, you uphold the law of the land as a juryman, you uphold the land and you keep it from pollution. Because if the land is polluted, the allodial landlord says, the land, he'll cause it to vomit you out. That's what he says, and he gives us plenty of examples in the Old Testament, not to mention the New, and not to mention all down through history. Well, here's Justice Taft. Listen to him. He said, "The framers of our Constitution were born and brought up in the atmosphere of the common law and thought and spoke its vocabulary. They were familiar with other forms of government, recent and ancient, and indicated in their discussions earnest study and consideration of many of them. But when they came to put their conclusions into the form of fundamental law in compact draft, they expressed themselves in terms of the common law, confident that they could be shortly and easily understood." And he continues, listen to him, "The language of our Constitution cannot be understood and interpreted safely except by reference to the common law and to the British institutions as they were when the instrument was framed and adopted." What he's saying is, our Constitution of the United States is a brief of common law government. It explains nothing. It does not explain the term regulated, for example, because people at that time were awash. They were a swim in our common law tradition. They knew what well-regulated meant, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. What does well-regulated mean? We used to talk, and I'd hear other people talk. Maybe you've heard this. There's two kinds of army in the United States. There's the regular army and the non-regular army. Well, who's the non-regular army? That's the reservist. That's non-regular. Then there's the regular Navy and the non-regular Navy. And the regular Navy thinks they're better than the non-regular Navy. Who's the non-regular Navy? That's the reservist. Now, if you've ever been in the Army or Navy, you've heard these terms over and over again because people talk about what's regular and what is not regular. A well-regulated militia being necessary. Listen, if you're regular, if you're regular, you're healthy. If you're regular. If you're not regular, you can have all sorts of physical problems. Regular means day by day, consistently. Let's take that back to the Second Amendment. Day by day, consistently. You got the regular army that's day by day. Then you got the reservist that just meets once a month. But the regular army, a well-regulated militia, the right of the people to do what? Keep where? In their homes. And do what? Bear. What does bear mean? That's just an old word that means to carry. How often? Every day. Regularly. If you haven't got your firearm with you, handy, where you can reach. When I was growing up, my brothers and I knew where the 12-gauge pump was. It was always in the same place. The same place so that my father, whenever he wanted to grab it, he could grab it. It was always right behind the door as you walked out onto the porch. It was right there. We didn't have a mud room. I wish we did. We took our boots off out in the pump house. Dad wouldn't let us get close to the house with all that stuff on our boots. But he didn't keep the shotgun in the pump house. The shotgun was behind the door. And it was utterly foreboden and understood that we ever touched it. He was the one that touched the shotgun until he told us to, we would. But if he didn't, we didn't. And you know, it's funny, I never did touch that shotgun until I was pretty near ready to leave home. But the point I'm making is, it was regular. It was loaded, too. And we knew that, too. We used to stare at it, talk about it. It was loaded, it was regular, and it was ready. And if he needed it, and sometimes he did, he grabbed it. We knew when he was going to use it, the way he walked. It was kind of fascinating when I think back on it. But that's regular, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Now, one more point, the National Guard. The National Guard cannot possibly be interpreted as the militia. Why? Because National Guardsmen are prohibited from keeping their own arms in their homes. What prohibits them? I'll tell you what prohibits them. An act of Congress, 32 U.S.C., section 105, A1. They aren't allowed to take their guns home. That's not the militia, friends, neighbors, and kin. The militia are those that keep and carry their guns. And, of course, we're talking here about military-grade weapons. Assault rifles, back at the time the Second Amendment was put in place, were those rifles that you loaded, that were muzzle-loaded. Those were assault rifles, and they did assault people with them. What does assault mean? Let's think about that a minute. We're bandying around a lot of words. Have you heard of assault and battery? I used to hear that when I was a boy. Thought it had something to do with salt and pepper. I really did. And then I learned later, when I went to law school, that that wasn't what it meant. Assault is to put, listen to this closely, and then apply it to this phrase, assault weapon. At common law, the word assault means this. It means that you or someone else has put another person in an immediate apprehension of a battery. What's a battery? Well, that's an unlawful or an offensive touching of another person. Could be a punch in the nose, could be a kiss. Could be putting your arm around somebody when you didn't really have freedom to do that. He didn't give you permission. But as I said, it could be a kiss also. An unlawful touching. Unlawful in that someone has not given you permission. Listen, you see a pretty girl, just don't run up and kiss her. She hadn't given you permission. By Jove, that's a battery. But as you're coming towards her, and you're getting ready to kiss her, and you've never been properly introduced, that's called assault, because you're putting her in an immediate apprehension of an offensive touching without permission. Assault? Raise your fist and give somebody a cussing? Yeah, if you're close enough, then arm's length. That's assault. Doesn't mean he's scared. He might not be scared of you at all. But you have put him in apprehension. He's saying to himself, this idiot's going to punch me. And he may do something in response. Assault is, don't do that. That's dangerous. Don't put people in apprehension of an offensive touching of their body. Well, now, if that's what assault means, what's that got to do with rifles? Well, if you're brandishing a weapon, you're brandishing it, you're swinging it about, threatening to shoot people, that's assault. That's against the law, especially if you got a weapon in your hand. Weapons that are made to intimidate people could rightly be called assault weapons. Weapons that are made to intimidate people, to threaten people because they look scary, that's why they call them assault weapons, you see. Not that that's necessarily always accurate, but that's why they're calling them assault weapons. And that legislation in Virginia goes into great detail in describing what an assault weapon is. Read that legislation if you're interested in such things. You can find it on the internet. And read it with that definition in your mind. What is an assault? It is something that puts the other fellow in an immediate apprehension of an unlawful touching. I realize they take it too far. But weapons are made, military-grade weapons are made to assault people. What? To put them into an immediate apprehension of danger so that they will conform. Well, our Second Amendment talks about those kinds of weapons being the constant companion of the militiaman. That's what it's all about. That's what our Constitution says. We have protection to do. Protection from who? Protection from the government. The government protects our right. It didn't give us the right to keep and bear arms. It protects that right. Well, I've talked long enough. Gerard, if you're there, it's back to you. And Gerard has to find the buttons like I did, and I wasn't doing a very good job. But if he can find them, he'll be back in just a minute. But in the meantime, while we're waiting for him to chime in...
All right, well, I'll take it if he's not here yet.
Pardon?
Yeah, he's muted right now, so...
Oh, okay.
All right, I'll take it until he gets back, so we'll take the next caller, first caller. All right, feel free to pipe into any of these questions if you want, Brent, okay?
Thank you, yes.
Okay, we're going to take Sonia. And Gerard, when you get back, give me a yell here. Sonia, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Sonia, you've been unmuted. Last call for Sonia. S-O-N-I-A, you got the mic. Okay, I guess we'll have to get back in line. Oh. Go ahead, Sonia. We had you there for a second.
Yes, I'm here. I think you answered my question earlier about registering for the militia.
Okay. Yeah, and we'll have that. I'm sorry?
And that you mentioned it earlier that was something that you do online.
Right, yeah, on nationallibertyalliance.org, you go to that page, and you'll see up on the, there's a blue bar there, and going towards the right, one, two, three, the fourth one from the right is People's Duty. You highlight that, and you can come down and click on Register for the Militia. Now, that button hasn't been put in there yet, but you can go there and read the page, get some information concerning the militia, and
okay.
we'll be putting the buttons in this week.
Okay? All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we'll go to our next caller, Barbara from New York. You got the mic. And anybody wants to get into the queue, star six, to get into the queue, star six.
Hi, this is Barbara from New York. Can you hear
mm-hmm.
me?
Yep, we can get you.
Hi. Okay, I wanted to go over just two things quickly, if I could. I wanted to find out, I knew that my village council was putting in LED street lamps, and I looked into it, and I found out that what they were, it's a part of the Internet of Things, and they put, it's a base station for 5G, and it's like a interactive system with different parts, and so the LED lights are actually, basically I looked into two things. I looked into what doctors had said about it and what the people involved in the technology thought of it, and I looked at two people, Mark Steele and Barry Trower. And Mark Steele, in 1 year ago, had a successful case that he won, in which it was about the he's an inventor and he's an expert in 5G, and they put the they had the system in his community in the street lamps, and there were three times the rate of miscarriages. There was increased cancer rates. There were all kinds of problems. He took it to court and he won. And he, being an expert, he had a lot to say. This is in England. The judge recognized him as a competent expert, which he said was a legal term, and recognized that there was significant harm to health in the 5G, and then he goes and he talks, discussing his case. He says that there's so much that's wrong with it. He says that the FCC is the one that sets up the regulations. There's a and these LED street lamp systems they're putting them in all kinds of cities and across the United States and also in Europe and other places as well. And FCC is the one that's supposed to put out the standard. They put out the standard. It's 5G, 4G, and probably 6G. I'm not sure about 6G. They're The standard is under SEC Part 15, which is for the class that 5G and 4G are in, which is non-licensed antenna with microwave radiation terminals. And if you're 30 meters away from the transmitter, if you only have 5 milliwatts of radiation, then it's considered safe for humans, safe for human health. However, 5G, instead of being 5 milliwatts, is somewhere between 700 and 1,000. So it completely violates the regulations, but they're being put in all over the United States and Europe and other, you know, other countries as well. So, and then I looked at this one doctor, and there are many, many doctors who say it's absolutely horrible for human health. I looked at Martin Paul, and his expert opinion was that these things were a complete disaster and that the regulations of the FCC aren't even good enough, and they're violated. So, and then to top it off, I looked at one in Australia. They've actually fought off a lot of them. This guy named Raymond Broomhall, who's a barrister in Australia, and he said he tried fighting it different ways, and what he came up with was the common law was perfect for it. He basically, what he does is he keeps it out of court in the first place. He says the common law provides you with a basic system of notice and consent or withdrawal of consent. And so he provides notice to the councils. And when you give notice, you actually set up the people who are installing it with the potential liability, and you tell them, I have an expert of medical opinion, and I'm removing my consent. And he said he, with that, he was able legally to remove thousands of 5G cells.
And that is in England?
That's in Australia.
Australia. All
yeah.
Right. We're going to have the same problem here. Because I know that they're moving towards 5G. I think they just moved to 4G. I know my phone went off, and I had to go out and buy another phone because I don't have a smartphone. I have one of those flip phones. And and I had to get one that's compatible to 4G and 5G. So I guess they're on 4G now.
Yeah.
And I don't know, is 4G dangerous also? Because I've heard bad news about 5G.
Yes. In fact, I read a bunch of articles, and they said, well, you know, the telecommunications company thought they could get away with 5G, but people are becoming aware of it all over the world, and it's actually, in some ways, it's a good thing, because now they're seeing that what we've been exposed to already in 4G and even earlier has been quite bad, and we're waking up to the fact that we have already have these health effects from 4G and previous.
I heard that 5G can be weaponized, and that's very frightening.
It was made as a weapon. Plus, so the system of choice, they've settled on the highways. So you have, I mean, it's very useful because they need to put the transmitters 150 meters apart. So these street lamps are just perfect. So they set it up. They have the lights, and they have the box underneath it, and then you drive past it, and it interacts with the headlights on the car. The lights are lasers. They're made as weapons. They're unfiltered, which makes them a weapon, and they're directed, which makes them a weapon. And then there's a capacitor inside, which is also considered a weapon. And so this is how they're exposing us to it.
We need to do something about it. I've thought about it, and here's the key. First of all, we need people that'll step up and do the research. And when we talk about people who really know and understand how to do the research, pull together all the necessary evidence all the documentation necessary, and maybe even a couple people that are expert witnesses in that, kind of pull them together, and then we could write a case on that. If we were to take it into the courts today, it is extremely doubtful that we would win, because our courts are corrupt and they want to maintain the status quo, and they really want this 5G. Now, I know Trump has kind of signed up on it, so I don't know what kind of information he's been given on this, Clearly, I don't believe that Trump would be for it if he understood the dangers of it, so maybe he just is something he hasn't been able to look deep into. Same thing with, I was talking with Gerard earlier about this and other people concerning the U.S. MCA, I think it's called. And now that also has some problematic situation. But here's the key, okay? Everything rides on getting just courts. If we don't have just courts, we don't have a nation that's for the people. We've lost control. We're going to lose our liberty, lose our lives even maybe, and all kinds of other problems. But if we have just courts, we can deal with these problems. All we need to do then is bring it into a common law court, which would be the people. Yeah. The people would decide. And so you'd get 12 people who would sit there, and we would then be able to lay this out to them and bring the evidence. And after all, their health is in jeopardy too. And if they can be convinced that this is a danger, then we will win that court case. And we can win all court cases that way. Whatever problems, and again, I was talking with Gerard, like I said earlier, and I told him, look, we got to get to this conversation when we have time at another time, because I was getting ready for tonight's program and so on. But I'm what I want to see is, where is the law? How is the code written that is damaging to our liberty? And once we can establish that, then we can render it null and void. We can bring it into the court, make our case to the people. Again, as long as you can prove this to the people will go along with it and say, hey, we don't want this. Or we can fix the problems, okay? It doesn't mean that we have to throw the baby out with the wash water, you know, with the water.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get rid of the problems. So we have to first identify the problems. We have to be able to prove that they are problems, plenty of documentation, and strong witnesses, and then get it into a court of justice. And again, we don't have courts of justice yet. They're not around no more. There is no court of law anymore. There's civil law, and civil law has combined equity and law together and call it civil law, and it's all code. It's Babylonian. It has nothing to do with we the people. And also, it's also destroyed our equity courts to some degree. You know, they may work relatively well on the United States Supreme Court in a lot of the decisions that they make on the high level, particularly, let's say, between the problems between Congress and the president, what's going on today, different things. And they may work well, and the only reason that they're working well maybe is because they got, quote-unquote, conservative control. Okay, I don't want conservative control. I want constitutional control. Okay, I want these judges to obey, to be constitutionalists, not conservatives, because eventually the liberals, if you want to call them that, remember our founding fathers were referred to as liberal, okay? So today it has a whole different meaning, okay, than what it did have way back then. But all those words are not good. It's constitutional. Either it's lawful or it's not. Let's get back down to the basis. And if we can get justice back into the courts, we can require law. The law to be applied everywhere, which means we would now have a just government, okay? And if we have a just government, we will have a just nation with just relationships with other nations and so on and so forth. And that would spread around the world because, again, if you're operating under justice, then you have true liberty. And that goes, you know, that true liberty gives you also the freedom of thinking and really growing in many different ways, technologically, economically, and so on and so forth. And that is desired by all men. So when other nations see the profit of being just, little by little, I believe it would grow. Of course, it's been suppressed by the New World Order. That's what the big battle, of course, is that's going on in Congress today. All these people that want to get rid of the president is because he's bringing us back to the basics and back to the law. And we, the people here at National Liberty Alliance and I'm sure other places, are pushing us back to natural law, back to courts of justice and courts of equity that operate properly, and back to requiring them to be obedient to the Constitution and not to the status quo, and back to being constitutional and not conservative. And so this is our battle right here. This is the key. When we win in the federal courts, and we will win, and we will only win, though, only if the people decide they want to win, because only the people can save the nation. We need 30,000 people to comfortably take back the nation. Thomas Jefferson said, we do not have government by a majority. We have government by majority who participates. And if we had 30,000 people across the nation to take these positions, the positions that the administrators for the common law, I mean, yeah, well, for the grand juries and the trial juries, and another the other half, the other 15,000 to take back the committeeman process, okay, 30,000 people, we would take back 100% control of this nation. And then we can then get our proper education in our schools, and we can start teaching our children the truth. And put it into their hearts and their minds at a young age, and what liberty is, and who we are, and what their heritage is, and so on. And at the same time, we can get, we can get really a process, not a process, but we can get a campaign going on a grassroots level by through the, working with the militia, working with the committeemen, and also with the administrators of the grand jury and any other people that want to volunteer to participate. We can get an education on the grassroots level into every single election district. Now, for an example, I'll use my county as an example. My county has 249 election districts. So we have 249 committeemen, okay, for both parties. 249 for Republican, 249 for Democrats. And again, we got to fuse that back together and get rid of the arguments and the debates between the two, and let's get back to the Constitution. So with 249 individuals, okay, working together with the other 249, so let's say 250, that's 500 people working the ground within the county, within their own election districts, to bring back a campaign to deliver to the local people a proper education. We can hand out booklets that explain certain things. We can refer to our website for an education, and then we have a higher education. You know, we have much, much more than what we offer the people on the surface. We have a very serious higher education on our website, okay?
Yeah.
And it goes to the great conversations that go back, thousands of years of the conversations, the great books, okay? We have all of that up on our website, those great conversations, the arguments, the debates, great people who have contributed much research and knowledge into writing that we can grow from. I mean, our founding fathers grew off a lot of these people back in the 14th, 15th, 16th century, and people who have worked out and debated and showed through maxims, truths that aren't deniable, what is justice, what is the proper way that we should be in order to have our heritage and our liberties. So we have that on our website, but we can bring this education to the people through the committeemen and the militia, and we can bring it back to the courts, requiring our elected officials to be obedient, and we can have a really successful nation. But it takes the people to do it. We need a minimum to start it off, 30,000. And with 30,000 people, with a proper mindset focusing in on saving this nation and bringing justice back to the courts, and that's the key. Justice to the courts takes control of everything, ultimately, because then we can start to get rid of all of these repugnant positions, ideas, statutes, or whatever you want to call them, that's being forced upon we the people, and deal with the problem with the 5G, eliminate it altogether if it's necessary, and also the problem with the MCA. Dealing with the inappropriate statutes and codes that's going to control that takes away powers from the state. So, and again, I don't know exactly what it is, and I'm waiting to learn from this from people who are looking into it. But my interest is to find the law. Where is the statute that's the problem? Show me the statute,
can I,
and then we can deal with the problem.
Can can I just say a few things about USMCA? Because I read the whole 239 pages this week, and it's really an amazing thing. I won't take a long time. I think it would be really great if people called their representatives. I mean, their senators are the ones to vote now.
They're not going to go anywhere with it. They're not going to look at. We don't need. No. They're not going to fix.
The president.
No. Well, the president. If we can educate the president, I think he would take a proper stand and he could possibly do something. But if you think we're going to get Congress to do anything that's just and right for the people, I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell.
Well, they say, I don't know. I mean, supposedly if a senator gets 50 calls on one thing saying they don't like it, they sit back and they think twice about it. You don't think so?
I think we'd be putting our energies in the wrong place. I know there are people doing that, and that's good. You know, it could work, and it could be helpful, and it's fighting the battle. But if you really want to get the best bang for your buck, so to speak, it's what we're doing here, because we can solve every single problem, and we can solve them quickly if we have just courts. Because we can stop anything that's repugnant to the Constitution, we can stop that in a just court.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to build the position. And look at anybody that really has great knowledge and has been doing some research, not only in these two areas, but in other areas. We have a problem with the food, and they got poison in the food. We got poison in the air. A lot of that has been stopped, but I still do see them from time to time flying around, dropping all that stuff, whatever they're doing. But we have this drug, the pharmaceutical companies, the Federal Drug Administration, all these are problems, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're poisoning us. And it doesn't seem like there's anything we could do because the special interest groups control all this, and they control Congress. When Congress is controlled by the money of the special interest groups, it's done. They're never going to do the will of the people, and that's the problem. We have to eliminate the money. And as a matter of fact, the system we're setting up, they don't need money to run for office. You just need to be a good statesman that can articulate yourself and stand up for the Constitution and persuade the committee men that that's what you're going to do, and we put you on the ballot, okay? And then we'll require you to do what you're saying. And if not, we'll yank you out. We'll recall you. You see, this is consent of government. This is what our government is built upon. Our Constitution is built upon this principle in the Declaration of Independence, that we have government by the consent of the people. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, you know, it's like a one thing fits all and fixes all. That's kind of true. Just courts will fix everything. You know, Rothschild said many, many years ago, give me control of the money and I don't care about the laws and things. I forget exactly how that quote goes, but it doesn't bother him. He can control things by the money. That
right.
was a lie. That was a lie, okay? Because you can have all the money of the world. If you don't control the courts and the courts are just, you're done. You can't get your repugnant things out there. Because it could be stopped by the law. So that was kind of a silent thing, you know, to focus us in a different place. They did take control of the money, and the money does seem to control things because they can pay people off. But if we had just courts, they wouldn't get away with that. You can't tell me or show me any way. You get open a court of law and prove to me that all this funny money being given by all of these special interest groups, okay, there's lobbying. You show me that's anything other than a bribe, because what they're doing is they're paying these people to bring forth a position that benefits them and builds up their power, their money, their power and money, okay, by getting Congress to vote for certain things, which they don't even have business voting for a lot of these things half the time, or more than half the time. But
right,
in any event, they're not representing the people. That we, the people, sent you there to represent us, not them. You know, when our founding fathers were brought to, came together to bring the Constitution and all of our founding documents together, you know, some of them wouldn't sign until they went back to see, you know, the temperature of their constituents. Where were the constituents with that? They truly were representing the people. They knew it was right. They knew this was a good thing, but they had to sell it to the people. And they did.
Right.
And the people agreed, at least, you know, again, we don't have government by majority. We have government by majority participated. So the majority that participated agree, and everything went forward. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, again, once you break that link between the people and their representative, and you got someone else giving you money, okay, to do something else, and the people say no, but you go in the way of the money, that's a crime. That's fraud. That's a bribe. And that needs to shut down.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Anything else? Again, anybody, if you want to do, if you've got the ability to do the research and bring these things together, and then you know, then we can write the legal papers. We can't do. We wouldn't write them now, but we'd gather the information, continue, and build the case. But once we get just cause, then takes these cases into the court. And we can shut it down.
And
things, well, I think 5G might have to be totally shut down because it sounds like there's no way to get around the health problem.
You take,
for instance, the USMCA, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that does have to be shut down, but we can eliminate the unlawful, the repugnant statutes within that code.
I don't see anything good in it. I mean, it's all by committee. It takes away the voice of the people. It has a central bank with Mexico, where the U.S. puts in most of the money. It puts us in charge of the environmental enforcement and monitoring of three countries. It's let's see, what else does it do? Oh, it creates open borders, and there's basically nothing you can do about it. And it also sets up infrastructure between the three countries, and the joint central bank pays for it. I mean, it's just horrible. It's a combination of Agenda 2030 and the Green New Deal, because if you look at the auto thing, that's not trade. That's manufacturing, and it's so...
Well, you know what,
controlled.
If someone can kind of, it sounds like you got a pretty good grip on this, what's going on.
I studied, I read it almost twice. Yeah,
so maybe
really
you can
bad.
Assist us, get into a committee to assist us to bring these things together. And, you know, and maybe we can, you know, while we're working and fighting to take control of the courts, maybe we can get the president on our side if we can lay out the problems to him and get it to him. And maybe he'll change his direction on it. Look at the trade with between Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. is a good thing. Okay, that's a good thing. The problem is the statutes in there that injure our liberties, whether it be the state's sovereign rights, and they're eclipse sovereign, by the way. But you know, they have they're sovereign states. And if it injures their clip sovereignty, then that has to be done away with. You know, the other thing is this: the control has to be done by Congress. If they are giving control over to different agencies or creating some kind of a three government agency of some kind or whatever you call it, I don't even know what you would call it. But if they were to create entities that control the trade between the states and between the nations. Well, that's a violation of the Constitution because
that authority
has been given to the legislators to make regular the trade between the states and even between the nations. And anything they do not have that power or the authority to give that power and authority to someone else. It's given to them and them alone. They're the ones vested with that power and authority. It's just like the money, you know, coining money. You know, when they gave up to the banks and the power and the authority for them to print, they've given it all away, you know. Rod, are you back?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, let me finish off with Barbara, and you could take the controls. But go ahead, Barbara.
It's an usurpation because what it does is it eliminates representative government because it takes away the states and the individuals' voices. So if you've made it into law, it's an usurpation, and then it's not pursuant of the Constitution. But anyway, I wanted to say the Trade Commission, the ITC, says that it will increase economic activity by 0.35%, and it will increase jobs by 1.5 2%, and then it later on it elaborates and it says it will.
Yeah, but if it violates,
it's not a trade deal. It's not.
But if it violates the rights of the states or the rights of the people, or the authority that was giving the authority to create, making this regular commercial activity regular. If it violates all that, then if we can salvage it by fixing those problems, that's one thing. If not, then it's got to go back to the drawing board.
But you know, it's not the whole thing. It's marketed as a trade deal. It's all about manufacturing and manufacturing cars. And if you read the section, it is so highly controlled.
Why don't you do this? Okay. Why don't you get to us? Get us a copy of. You said there's 200 and some odd pages, right?
239, yeah.
239. Get us a copy of that. Get it to Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org. Make contact with Jan, and we'll try to have some conversations privately with other people who might want to participate with this to come to a better understanding and see if it's anything that can be salvageable. Maybe the whole thing is a problem. I'm just surprised that Trump, again, he maybe hasn't looked deep enough to understand the problems.
I'll tell you what, Trump's problem is that he wants the economy to go into the next election. He's doing whatever he can to keep that money coming in.
It looks like a win, but...
I think he's doing whatever he has to do to keep the economy going. And regardless, and he said that that's what he was going to do. I don't know if you remember the statement he made.
Oh yeah.
He said, "Look, if it's going to make the people money, I'm for it." Well, you know what? And he's not. Abortion makes money. Is he for that? No.
Well, we need to educate him on this. And again, you can't educate. I can't educate him until I become educated. And we have to write papers to educate him. So we have to come to an understanding of these things. You know, we have to discover the problem, we have to describe the problem, and offer the solution. And the solution may be this just ain't going to work at all, can it? Maybe the solution. And if that is the case, and that doesn't work, okay, because remember, Trump is just one person. Let's say we sell him. You know, Congress may still go forward with it. He's got the opportunity to veto it, but if they get to the 2/3, then they're going to get it through. And I'm sure there's enough money there going that there's enough payola for them to be able to be paid off to get it through. And if that is the case, then we can quash it in the courts. But we can't quash it in the courts until first we have the control of the courts. Courts of law must be controlled by the people. It cannot be controlled by bar attorneys. It can't be controlled by bar judges. It can't be controlled by anybody in government. It's the people, period, end of subject, nothing else to talk about.
The Trade Commission, who's got this very important role in the whole act, says that it's going to, you know, only raise jobs by 1.2%, but it says it's going to take away manufacturing resources from the rest of the economy, and it's going to reduce U.S. exports, it's going to reduce real income, and it's going to reduce employment in the overall economy. That's not a win in the area of the economy.
Be a moot point, okay? The thing that's going to close this down, okay, is if there's a violation of the law, if it's repugnant to the Constitution or repugnant to the statutes and codes that have been written under the authority of the Constitution, if it affects or injures the people, the states, if people are injured in their sovereignty, or the same thing with their states, and again, we all have clipped sovereignty. Even we, the people, are clipped because there's only one sovereign, that's God. And we're a clipped sovereign under God, and the states are clipped sovereigns underneath us. And the federal government is a clipped sovereign underneath the states. And so if there's a problem that affects that flow and injures any of the sovereignties that we're talking about, then it's repugnant and it can be shut down that way. So we could do that in the courts, but again, we're not going to be able to do that in today's courts environment. They're totally out of control. Jurisdiction's unknown under civil law, and it's all about money.
I just don't know why Trump would promote it. I mean, it's just.
Well, again, maybe he just doesn't have look at, he can't learn and know everything, but it's got to be brought to his attention, and maybe someone just hasn't brought it to his attention, and maybe we can bring it to his attention, okay?
But again, even if
he doesn't, we don't get his attention, or even if he disagrees with it, again, on the long run, on the bottom line, when we win the courts back, anything we can convince the people, all we have to do is prove it and lay it out. You know, truth is self-evident. You know, as Brent mentioned earlier, you know, in courts it's cross-examination. And it's a debate and the argument in the court, and truth arises. It becomes self-evident, you know.
Right.
Any good detective will tell you he discovers, the truth is usually discovered by looking for the contradictions and looking for the consistencies. Truth is always consistent, and that which is false and a lie and fraudulent is always inconsistent. Always.
Right.
It's just a law of nature. Nature's law, period.
Yeah, I heard that Endangered Species Act, when that was passed, I read this article that said that maybe two congressmen read it, and I thought, whoa. It's actually the case that sometimes they just don't read.
Well, the Patriot Act, I believe it was the Patriot Act, was brought through, and none of them read it.
Really?
Yeah, there's been quite a few things came through. And what happens, they push it through so quickly and don't even have time to read it. You know, I've heard that argument in Congress where there was congressmen complaining, you don't even give us enough time to read it. You want us to pass it and read it later.
I bet they do that, right? Yeah.
Oh, they of course. Look at we are people. They got their democracy, and there's nothing worse in the world than democracy. Democracy is one step away from oligarchy, and we are an oligarchy, and we've been an oligarchy since at least Kennedy. And it's been back and forth for a long time before that. The battle for control of America goes all the way back to 1776 and even before that, okay? But the bottom line is that democracy is only a stepping stone to an oligarchy, and that's exactly what we have. Trump upset the oligarchy.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got to take our next caller. So.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Gerard, you got it.
Okay, we have Greg from, it looks like, Michigan. You've been unmuted. Go ahead. Greg from Michigan.
Hello, you hear me?
I can.
Okay.
You sound a little far away. You got to run across the room and get up to the mic.
I was in the next room.
Yeah, I knew it.
All right. I'm cooking some soup here, if you can believe it. It's interesting to me that you happen to talk about 5G tonight. I've been part of a group of people that meet weekly I've probably been meeting with them a year and a half, one night a week. We've been discussing and looking into 5G for at least a year, maybe longer. There's all kinds of evidence out there that shows how dangerous 5G is. There are plenty of people that suspect that there are some very nefarious intentions of the deep state, basically, the corporates, and the military people that want to control us. 5G was actually invented in the 50s, if I'm not mistaken. It was military research. You can find videos about this. I've seen them. It was designed as a riot control weapon initially. I've seen a video where they had a truck pull up in front of a crowd of people. They were soldiers that they were using to experiment with this with, and they had the big dish antenna on the back of the truck. They elevated it up and turned it on, and all of these people about 100 feet away or so all jumped back, and they were experiencing a burning sensation in their skin. Well, that's unless you turn it up more. But 5G is the same shortwave microwaves that come out of your microwave oven. They're non-thermal, and the excuse that they give for saying the waves are not harmful is because they don't produce heat. Well, they can if they're turned up high enough, but for the typical broadcasting, No, they, you know, they don't produce heat that anyone would notice, but they're quite dangerous. They're quite harmful. We've seen lots of studies done by private organizations that do them, that show that 5G is dangerous. It's harmful. It can be used for a lot of purposes other than just making sure you can download a movie or a song faster. They're investing billions and billions. Actually, I guess it's $1 trillion or more worldwide, that they're going to use to distribute all these millions and millions of mini towers for 5G, you know, every 10 or 12 houses up and down everybody's block. Elon Musk and SpaceX, you might have read, has been launching dozens of mini satellites at a time for about a year or so now. He launches tens of them at a time, 50, 100, whatever. And I don't know who's giving him permission to do this, but nobody's stopping him. And these are all tied into, the upcoming Internet of Things and broadcasting 5G down to Earth from space. And you can read about that. I can send you info on it. I've seen plenty of it online, and I've got many emails from people with web links to these videos. 5G can be used even for, I don't know if any of you have heard of mind-to-skull technology, and I know that sounds odd, but it exists, and of course that's a military creation. I saw a video on YouTube months ago where a military, I don't know if he was an army general perhaps, was talking in a conference room in front of an audience. And you recall during Desert Storm a couple decades ago, or 30 years, whatever it was, where the Iraqi soldiers were coming out of their bunkers, surrendering to drones flying overhead, that kind of thing. We saw the videos, you know, if you're old enough, you saw the videos of them coming out dozens or hundreds at a time with their hands up and their rifles thrown down, and it was just one of our drones flying by. Well, this general told people, he said, voice-to-skull technology. We made them hear internally. It wasn't an audible voice, but internally in their brains, the technology made them hear what was being said by somebody into, you know, the device that projected the waves. Surrender your weapons, throw down your weapons and surrender, don't fight anymore, and this is Allah. And people in the audience laughed. And he said, well, you might think it's funny, he said, but it worked, and we did it. Well, that was 25 years ago or more. What do you think they can do with it now? I'm waiting, and I know people say conspiracy theory. I think sometimes some things are just conspiracy fact. Can you imagine if they can use this technology, which they can? I've seen a number of different videos and read different articles about it. It's been around for years, actually. To tell people in a neighborhood, surrender your weapons, bring your guns out to the curb for pickup. Now, that might sound pretty far-fetched, but from what I've read and other people I know have read about this technology, this is doable. As far as Trump goes, Trump already knows all about this. Trump has, from what I've been told by friends in the group, and I haven't seen the articles, but I would imagine you can find them if you looked for them. Trump said a while back two things. One, the White House is not going to have 5G installed around the White House parameter anywhere, and supposedly that's because the technology is too susceptible to hacking. It's too vulnerable to hacking, and I know people who say that's a bunch of bunk. It is not, and I don't know details on, but that was their excuse. And also, back this past summer, it was announced, from what I've been told, that 5G is not going to be installed around Mar-a-Lago. You know, well, why is that? But yeah, he is promoting it and hyping it to be put everywhere else except around him and his family and his staff and all of that. And again, you can look into this if you like. But You know, there's plenty of info out there. I've got dozens of emails. There's an organization called We Are the Evidence, wearetheevidence.com, and there's a woman, an Israeli researcher named Daphna Tachover. I think it's T-A-C-H-O-V-E-R, Daphna, D-A-F-N-A-A. She is the president of We Are the Evidence, and I heard her speak about 5G, and also she's very against the smart meters, which 5G is designed to work in conjunction with. She's an Israeli woman who was trained about using microwave technology for the Israeli army years ago. And she eventually got them to stop using wireless routered computers in schools in Israel. And she, you know, she is very susceptible to, you know, a lot of discomfort and things, problems she has from being around these waves. She knows what kind of effect it can have on people. She found evidence that it may be harming the children in school with all the broadband, all the Wi-Fi that everybody uses in school now. And she went and had some Israeli schools, you know, go back to hardwired computer rooms and things. Well, they had a high incidence of autism, or not, yeah, autism and what, not autism, attention deficit disorder. Attention deficit disorder, it affected something like somewhere between 10 and 20% of the students, okay? Well, after they got rid of the Wi-Fi and went to hardwired, the incidence of attention deficit disorder dropped off to next to nothing. It went from being, you know, two or three dozen students in each school to being two or three kids. You know, I mean, this stuff is communications, and these waves are sending information and things, and your brain may pick them up, but not in a precise or unscrambled way, if you will, and it disturbs your thought patterns and things. They have to cut down trees.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think that you've done enough research and collect enough information that you could prove this in a court of law?
You know, I think it's already been proven. There's a ton of research.
Well, again, you know, here's the problem is proving it. Okay, if we have documentation, if we have expert witnesses, and the proof
and
is in the pudding,
and they are on video. I can show you
okay,
some of
well,
them testifying
my point
on video.
Is this. My point is this. Look, I read a lot of things on the internet. As soon as I start reading a lot of stuff, I just leave it because, you know, people talk about things and they tell, but they never give the sources, they never give the facts, they never give the details to show the proof. It's very rare that anyone does that. But what I'm trying to say is this: it seems that you've done a lot of research here. You've been involved in a group. I don't know how much you feel that you can kind of bring this thing together, and maybe you'd be interested to work with us to try to bring the evidence together in order to compile it. And then we can write the papers around it, and we could do something about it. We can't do anything about it now, but we can do something about it in a court of law when we get courts of law back open again.
I know two women here in Michigan that have done a lot to put this information out, and they work with Daphna Tachover when she's in the area personally. I will have them get in touch with you, and they
yeah, have them get in touch
you.
With have them get in touch with Jan. Okay, he's the national director on. You can find them under our directory. Hang on, if you go to nationallibertyalliance.org and you click on the directory, okay.
I have Jan's email. I've emailed him.
Oh, okay. So he's the national director. Get them in contact with him, and then he can put together a meeting with myself and Gerard and anybody else that might be interested. And if we can get a committee together, that you know. But we need people who know how to research and how to document things and just bring it together. Once it's all together,
who've been
then
doing
we
this
can
for
work
a couple
that.
Years now on 5G. They've got everything.
Okay, so we need someone for that. And also, you know, for others listening, maybe with other expertises or knowledges of people or with knowing people that have this knowledge that might be interested in doing something, not just in this area, but also with the FDA, okay, the Food and Drug Administration. Major, major problem with these people, the pharmaceutical companies, which is all connected into that anyway. But, you know, someone that could work with us to lay out the situation. Look at, our food is full of poison. And I'll tell you what, I think one of the most destructive things in our food is this high fructose corn syrup. Okay.
Oh, now definitely.
They've already
outlawed it in certain countries, John.
Yeah. Well, we have to do something about it. But you know, again, I haven't got time to research it. I'm working on some other things. But we have people who can do the research, bring it together, and then we can bring the law and the court system together with the facts on whatever case it is we're working on, and we can solve these problems. But people have to step up to do these things. You know?
And let me mention one other thing about constitutionality, because this is a big rub for people against 5G. About a year or so ago, the communications lobby got together, and they had the FCC, okay, which is not a lawmaking body, but the FCC, at least to my knowledge, it's not, they, in agreeing with the executives of the communications companies, you know, like Verizon and AT&T and the other 5G players, they passed, quote, a law, an ordinance, whatever, where municipalities, they say, no longer have the authority to deny the installation of 5G equipment by utility companies within their municipal borders. They're even claiming that they have the authority to put antennas on people's rooftops if they need to, if they think that location is a good location for them,
again,
under some eminent domain
If it is destructive, if it is dangerous. Look, let's say this 5G wasn't even dangerous as far as, you know, causing any kind of medical problems. Let's just say that's the case, okay? But if it could be turned into a weapon, and they put this weapon everywhere in the United States, you know, at least in the populous areas.
Sure.
That's too dangerous to do. We can't allow that. I mean, that's having atomic bombs sitting in our neighborhood.
These cell phone towers that they're putting up everywhere.
Again, we need some. We are a proactive group. We will deal with this problem. But we need people to help us to deal with the problem, to do the research, bring the documentation together, bring the witnesses together, and compile it all together so that we can then do something with it. But
regarding 5G, I know a couple of people that can supply you more info and research than you'll have time to look through, including testimony by experts out in Lansing, Michigan here more than a year ago.
Okay,
it's on
video.
If
you can organize it, get in touch with Jan. We'll have some meetings. We'll discuss it. We'll get committees going on it. And then we'll start compiling everything and getting it ready for the courts. And when the day comes that we can now go into the courts with it, we'll be ready to rock and roll. Look, we need to get prepared for being able to take care of business on the other side of things. When the deep state is gone and the people take back the control of the courts and control of the consent of our government, that's when we could do something with it. Right now, you know, if we were trying to launch a case right now, we're going into the lion's den. You know, we're not going to get any, but we should be preparing for it, because I think next year is probably the time when we will be in the position to take things back in the courts. That they're not going to have a choice. Okay, but
I hope you're right.
Again,
Greg, I don't know what you know about how all this stuff ties together, and it does. There is a master plan. They keep everybody compartmentalized, and it has to do with the geoengineering. You know, if you say chemtrails, they look at you like woo-woo, but that's what it is. That's part of the nanotechnology to put these nano fibers.
Yeah, that's pretty scary too,
huh?
Yeah, and they use HAARP in conjunction with the geoengineering, from what I understand.
Well, they can do what they did to the Iraqis, where they heard these voices in their head. This is Allah. They want to do that to us. And they need this dome over us. They need that aluminum, barium, you know, stuff floating in the air, so that everything is a big resonator, so that when they when they activate, it's in our bodies. We've been breathing.
That stuff is absorbed into our bodies. That's right.
Right.
That's
so
exactly
when the time
right.
is right, they're going
nanobots.
They're going to activate them. And
right.
when they activate them, they'll even be able to control your movements. Everybody looks. Everybody says, "Oh, you're crazy. This and that." But you know, that's what this is about. And
that is what this is about.
All that stuff. Remember that paper, Silent Weapons for Silent Wars, John, that Mike gave us?
You know, I've heard of it. I have not seen it. I've heard it mentioned.
It is massive, and it has a lot. The work has been done because that paper documents all using all their own information off their own, off of the government websites and the scientist websites. They've documented it. The documentation is out there. You know, the trouble is now they know that people are going to fight it. It's going to be harder to get this stuff, you know.
Well, I mean, and they take things down off the internet.
Right, right. But somebody has to tie it all together, too, because there's a master plan that they're working for.
That's right.
And
let me just say about the cell phone towers, if you look into it, I saw a video where an insider, a tower technician, was interviewed, and he pointed out, and I went up to these towers and looked at them. You ever seen the power supply cables that go to these things? They've got enough big, heavy, inch and a half, 2-inch diameter cables to power your city going up to them. And like he said, they're powered. They have the supply way, way many times over what they need to broadcast any kind of communications waves that they send out each day. They've got many times over the power supply capacity.
Let's pick this up another time because we're coming
all
to
right,
the end of our
right.
program. We have a few other people, but I really would like to get some conversations going, and get a committee going.
I'll try to have those women get in touch with Jan before the end of the week.
We need people who can take control of a particular project and make it happen. And if you might, if you have the ability to do that, if you think you have the ability and you can pull together all of the necessary documentations and the witnesses, and then I don't know how much time Gerard's got. I know he's still suffering through some problems, but nevertheless, if he can take control, because if we can get five or six different things, I mean, we got the food problem, we got the air problem, we got the water problem, we got the 5G problem, we got the problem with USMCA problem. We got so many other problems, and each
right.
one of them
right.
we need people working on. And then hopefully Gerard will have the time to orchestrate them all together. And then when he gets it to me and I go through all this, we can then bring the law and bring a case up and deal with this. And that'll be at the right time. But now is the time to get the research and get it all together.
I will get these women regarding the 5G to get a hold of Jan before the week is over.
Okay.
They have a virtual library they can give to him.
Okay, so with that, let's move on to our next caller, and I'll be looking forward to some conversations
night.
With you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, it looks like we have James from Oregon. Go ahead, James. You've been unmuted.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hey.
Yeah, my name is James Lico, and I live in Port Orford, Oregon. And I am a targeted individual, and I can verify. I don't recognize I don't know the man's name, but he was talking about the cell phone towers, and they are indeed weapons. And I'm a canary in the coal mine. I was targeted back in 2010. There are probably millions of people who are targeted. There's there's thousands who know it. Most people don't know it, and they're targeted, and they're doing experimentations on them. And it's just like when I just wanted to mention that the towers are all, I can't say all weaponized, but most of them are weaponized. And they can reach out with a beam and hurt people, kill people.
That's microwave technology. That's what they're using.
Yeah, but it's also scalar technology. It's high frequency, all the way up to frequencies all the way. These things are very sophisticated. I don't know how they all work, but they have They have beams that resonate with different parts of the body. They have all of our DNA, which causes it to be lethal, and they don't, you have to use high power. They can use low power and resonate with our DNA to inflame different parts of the body, and that's what they're doing with targeted individuals. Right now they're trying to do Parkinson's in me because they have to shut me up. I won't stop talking, and they really have to shut me up because in a police state you have to quell dissent, stamp it out. And that's what they're doing. And these the 5G is the 4G is a weapon system, and the 5G is it's not just a little increase, it's a major sea change increase. With the bandwidth that they will be able to use, it will be able to target every man, woman, child in the world.
What are you saying? What are you saying, and who are you saying it to that leads you to believe that you're targeted?
Well, I have a bachelor's degree in computer science. I have associate's degrees in biology and electronics engineering technology. I'm targeted because, you know, it hurts. We know we're being attacked with RF weapons up through microwave. And, you know, it's just a fact. If you look at my website, you'll be probably instantly convinced, you know?
What's your website? Lico.com. Give us your website. We'll take a look at that.
JamesLico.com.
What is it?
JamesLico.com. People are being killed with this all over. This is a silent holocaust.
Well, let me tell you, I've been looking at, I read a lot of stuff, and one of the things is none of their technology works on everybody all the time. So what they've done is, look, they wanted to make a virus that they could kill, you know, the whole world with, or kill only blacks, or kill only, you know. And what they found was, is it's impossible to do, it won't work. So in order, they came close, then, so part of their conclusion was, is they need to injure the immune system of the people so that this thing will work. And that's where it ties into the food systems and the vaccinations and all these things that lower our immune system. Look, you can resist any of this stuff if you have perfect health. But who has perfect health and who has a perfect diet? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's many methods of fighting this stuff, and some people have a natural resistance to it. It doesn't work on everybody, and they're not even sure why it doesn't work on everybody, but they know that it doesn't. They've been doing a lot of research. See, we need to find all this out because in order to protect yourself, I mean, look at it, if we could get them to take it down, it's such a massive program, you know.
Sure.
It's in everything. And it's almost like what the Bible says, unless those days be shortened, even the elect will not survive, because they are so completely integrated this stuff on so many levels, you know. It's almost like we got to shut everything down and start over. I mean, they got it in everything, you know, all the food systems, all the communications.
It's been a very gradual thing,
In America, everything is kept compartmentalized in the Western nations, you know, which means nobody really knows what they're working on. They're working on something here, and there's a group of 100 people over here, and there's a group of 200 people over there, and they have no idea what it is they're working on. But meantime, they're all working, building a specific thing that's going to end up getting tied together when they're done with it, and that's what they do, you know.
Right.
And so that's how they're able to do it. And they don't put all the information together. And by the time you put this information together and put it out there, and this is what Trump has a problem with, because if he came in and just charged the people who were committed crimes with crimes, it would be beyond belief. The people would not go for it because they would think he was crazy. Just like you're talking now, people are listening and going, this guy's crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. It can't be that. It's you know, I mean, just their research in the DNA and their cloning and all this stuff, it's stuff that was totally beyond our wildest imagination 20 years ago, but today it's reality. So it's a massive task to pull all this together and then go after it. And you got very powerful corporations that have that are highly vested in this, and they receive public funds to do it. And it's gonna really, you know, when they show these wars of the machines against the people, it's kind of like that, because you're gonna how are you gonna fight an enemy that isn't even human, you know?
Right.
And they got these nanobots and these drones that they can stick. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. And the thing is if you knew everything, and you tie it all together, it's almost like you want to curl up and go in a hole, because it's such a massive battle, and it's going to be very hard to try to put this in a comprehensive. I mean, it's going to put you to sleep when you're reading it, because it's thousands and thousands of pages are going to be required. Right. To put all this evidence together and pull it together and then put it into a document. But it needs to be done. Don't get me wrong. It needs to be done. And while you're doing it, and while a group is doing it, they're going to target you. They're going to use whatever technology they have to make you sick, to give you cancer, to drive you crazy, to make you look schizophrenic, because they can, and they are, and that's what they do. So, you know, I don't know what to say about that, but we'll look into your website. I want to get moving. We got a couple other people.
Yeah, please do.
And it's already after 12, actually. But we need to. How do you take down, you know, a big mountain? You know, it's a piece at a time. You got to start taking the bucket of sand out. It's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be quick, but once it's compiled and it's put, we need to make it available so that more education of the people and turning a light on it is what will stop it. Because when everybody understands what it is, then the voices will be raised and then something will be done. But as long as what they do is they make the lie so big that people can't, they go into cognitive dissonance. They can't believe that this could possibly be true. You know, and a lot of the problem is even the religions out there, they tell the people, oh, God will never let man do this, and God will never let man control the weather, and God will never let do this. And I said to them, who are you kidding?
But it's all true.
You know, first of all, he said we are like gods, like unto God, because we have the ability to reason and to use our reason to affect nature. You know, he told us to subdue the world, but also we have the power to ruin the world. You know, we're supposed to subdue nature to our advantage, not to our disadvantage. See, they're using all the technology for bad. This is the powers and principalities that are giving information to men before their time, and giving them and using greed and lust and all this other stuff to get them to sell their souls to do this work. You know, I mean, if you're an entity and you don't have a body, how do you accomplish these things? Well, you get somebody with a body to do it for you. And that's what's going on. So they've manifested themselves in certain people that willingly went into that in order for wealth and power and whatever other thing they offered them. So it's quite a battle, and the main thing is I don't know if you'll win it in a court of law as much as you're going to have to win it in a court of public opinion. The more it becomes common knowledge, that's the way we get rid of it. Because when the mothers get together and the mothers figure out that they're harming their children, that's when the average person understands what they're doing, that's when the cry will go up. And they won't be able to do it anymore, because people will be taking buzz saws to the cell towers and stuff like that, and they'll damage a whole lot more than they need to if it gets out of control. You know what I mean? Under anarchy. But this is a massive project, and it was always hard to talk about. because they, you know, just this conversation we're having here on this tonight on the NLA, there's a bunch of people that just gave us tinfoil hats because we lost them, because they don't believe that any of this is possible. And I told this one religious person, I said, who are you kidding that God won't let them control the weather? I can go in your prayer book right now and find prayers to God to stop the hurricane. I said, so aren't you controlling the weather with your prayers then, if you believe that? Why pray to God or any other entity to do this or do that if you don't believe it can happen? And if you can do it that way, there's other ways you can do it. So, you know, it's just making a point that just because you can't taste, see, feel, or touch something doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. Much of our existence has to do with unseen forces, waves, and frequencies and things, and I don't know that they're just discovering it. The average person is just discovering it. But the powers that be, the powers that have been doing this, your Area 51s, they've known this stuff since the 40s. We are so far behind what the military intelligence knows, and that's just coming out now. That's just starting to get released now into the public. So until the greater public is aware, we're going to have a lot of problems with this. And really, you know, everybody should band together to stop all this 5G stuff, you know, and the smart meters and all that stuff. You know, if everybody, you know, I've heard that these power stations come up with the police to hook the meter up to the house. You know, at that, as far as I'm concerned, that requires, if they have officials coming to hook something up that's going to harm me, to me, that's war. That's revolution right there. You know,
it is war.
You know, so, you know, if everybody pulled the gun out and said, get off my property, if they ran that all, if a whole area's got together and said, don't step your foot on my property, because as far as we're concerned, you're assaulting us and we're going to shoot you, basically. Well, that might be what it takes. And I don't, you know, they're willing to push it to that before they give up. They're not going to give up easy. They've been working on this stuff a long time, and they've been implementing it, and a lot of it is already implemented, and it's just a very short time before it all connects together. The Internet of Things, this whole big world that they have envisioned, that they're going to be able to control everybody and everything through all this frequency and microwave and all this other technology they have, it's right around the corner. We're right on the cusp of it. And the other side of that is, if we beat it, we're going to have a world that all that technology is put to good use. We'll have free energy, we'll have good health care, we'll have disease-free, basically, existence. And, you know, if we look at it, back in the Garden of Eden, people lived to be many hundreds of years old. But that's because they had clean air and clean water, and they were living according to the way that God built us to live. And what do? Is every year we move further and further from that, and our life and our lifespan goes down. You know, so
that's right.
Now they got technology where you're the living dead, you're the walking dead. You should be dead, but they got you on this medication to keep you walking, to just give you an existence where you're in pain and you're this and you're that, but you don't drop dead. You know, I mean, where you really probably should drop dead, you don't. So, you know, they want to bring a situation on that the living will envy the dead, so to speak. You know, that's their dream. So it's a crazy thing, and it's a brave new world that we're on the cusp of. And I don't know if we're going to make it, or it's just going to end, and you're going to have a reset, and those things that Christ preached on the Sermon on the Mount are going to come to pass, where the meek will inherit the earth, and whatever that meant is going to happen. Because I don't know, it's such a big task to stop this. It's going to require much, much prayer and fasting and diligence. And I don't know that if we can do it. I almost feel like it's almost, you know, the more you study and the more you read, and I've recently come to understand how these things tie together, all these different technology and all these different crazy things, how one feeds the other. It's unbelievable. And you're right. Watching those Iraqis come out of that hole and throw their guns on the ground and kneel down to the American forces, the tanks, and praise them as Allah. You know, these were the elite fighting forces, his Republican Guard. They were battle-hardened troops. You know, we don't have battle-hardened troops in this country. These guys have been in battle since the time they were kids. They've been carrying guns around since they were 6, 7 years old. They've been killing. They've been in the, and troops like that getting up and surrendering, they had, surrender was not in their vocabulary, but they did, didn't they? So it's that powerful, and don't think it's not. Anyway, I think we're beyond time. I think we should close up now. And I mean, it's a good discussion, and it's something that we should at least put in the court so that there's documentation there. You know what I mean? I mean, like John says, you know, we may not be getting results, but now that we're the watchers on the wall, and if we don't sound the horn, when we come to this knowledge, we have this knowledge because God woke us up to it. So it's our jobs to put it to yell it. If we don't sound the alarm, then God's going to hold us responsible. Those of us who are enlightened, like yourself, you have a duty to do like you are tonight. Bring this information to the people as a watcher and put it out there. If you put it out there and they don't do anything and then they get demised, then it's their own fault. Then God says, you know, whatever happens to them after you warn them is their own problem. But right now, people that are in the know, that are awake, it's the job of those people to put this stuff out there because there's an obligation. And these things brought to NLA, the way we can put them out there is by documenting them, putting them in the case, submitting it so there's a record. Look, if you put any electronic record that goes into a court or even on the air anywhere, it's there forever, for all time. And that's what this is about. It needs to be documented because at some point it should be put up so that it'll never happen again. You know, I mean, if God's going to rebuild the earth and make a new earth and this and that, there has to be a testament and an example to what went wrong and what not to do again. You know what I mean? So I mean, I don't know what his plan is, but he talks about, you know, people inheriting the earth. What does that mean? That implies that there's going to be an earth that people are going to live on. I don't know who they're going to be, but when they're here, they need to have a documentation of the stuff that went wrong. You know, the devil's trick is to give men light before their time. And that's what he did to Eve. Eat the apple and you'll know what God knows. You know, he didn't tell her that, yeah, what God knows is that there's, you know, is all the pain and suffering that's also possible, and the sin and the disobedience and all these things that are going to lead to bad health and everything else. You know, he deceived her, and that's what happens. It's been going on since then. So people, you know, what's his name? Einstein comes out with an E=mc², this and that, and instead of getting nice, clean nuclear power, which they can do, by the way, what do we get? We get an atom bomb to destroy people. So they got knowledge before their time, and they use it for evil instead of good. And with that, I'm gonna close. I think I've said enough. But you get the idea. Look, at part of our job as NLA is to document this and put it in the public record, which is the courts, which are designed. And our courts have the potential to be the best courts in the world because even the common law of England, that they never went as far as what America can go. The original intent of the founders was natural law and common law to be in the way that we understand it, the American way, in the courts, and where the people are the rulers, are the sovereigns of the court, you know, under God, under God's law. And that's how you become a sovereign in the court, is because you're standing as a representative for the Creator of all things, and everything that you do falls under those parameters, of truth and light.
Right.
So that's all I can say is that that's what our mission here is. That's what our job is. Okay?
Okay. So, I commend you guys for listening and being open to these things, because it's important that we do. You know that, and that's what you said. So, and it is late. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. So, look, we're reaching a lot of people tonight, and hopefully, you know, these shows will get replayed. See, part of the thing that people don't realize is you can go in our archives and you can pull out these conversations and you can send them around, and that's what people should be doing. They should be making this, like, even if you take a snippet of it and you put it together and then send it out to people so that they can hear this stuff, and mm-hmm. and so. Once it goes out on those electronic waves, it never goes away. It never goes mm-hmm. away, and that's our job, is to document this stuff in a way that it'll never go away. And that's, you know, and when enough of those vibrations get out there, that's when people are going to wake up. You're going to have the 100 monkey syndrome, where all of a sudden everybody knows, and it says nothing will be hidden anymore. See, right now everything is hidden. But there's going to be a time where nothing is hidden, and everybody's going to know. And it's coming soon. I think it's coming soon. And so
I do too.
So we are one of the forces that are going to put that out there to the people. So just, you know, do whatever you can, whatever little part. You might not think it's a lot, but if you take it and you post it and you put it out there, that's one of the things. And look, we don't only have to document this in the court. We can document it in our social media, in our conversations, just putting it out there, just talking about it like this. My voice is a frequency and a vibration that's out there. Somebody's listening to it. Oh, I know. I guarantee you the NSA is listening to us. So they're the first ones who are enlightened. Look at, if there was an agent there that was listening to us tonight and he's listening to this, if he continues doing what he's doing, he now knows that it's nefarious and it's no good, and he has to live with himself, and he's going to suffer the consequences. When the time comes for judgment, he's going to be under judgment. So any of these people that are listening to this stuff that think it's foo-foo and they've been enlightened, now they're going to have trouble doing the jobs that they're doing, or they should have anyway if they have a conscience. So with that, I'm going to say thank you, everybody, and we're going to sign off. I know we got a couple people. We'll try to get you, those guys that are in there, try to get in there first. Maybe we'll document you. But there's only three left, so. But it is late. We're way over. We're 20 minutes over, so I don't want this tape to go too long. Thank you, everybody. Let's and we'll see you here next Monday, and we can continue. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm.